All right, everybody, welcome to another episode of Brownie Points. I'm Dan.
I'm Nick.
And this is the podcast where a guy with a film degree
and a guy who got a new microphone for Christmas and is trying to figure out all the odds and ends of it
talk to you about movies. This week, we went to the theaters once and we saw the new Adam Sandler drama, go figure, Uncut Gems.
Then, we go back in the time machine to 1983 to see my favorite Christmas movie of all time, and frankly, what Christmas dinner is not complete without some brownies? We go see A Christmas Story.
All of that on the final episode of 2019 of Brownie Points! All right, everybody, welcome to the show. As always, Nick and I never jump right into the reviews. Every week, we like to start off the show with a segment that we call Brownie Bites. As we've been doing for the past couple of weeks, it is the end of the year, so we have been doing numerous best of, worst of, just your standard kind of fare with lists. We've been doing numerous lists throughout the month of December, and this week's list features five films that we considered to be underappreciated, five films that we think didn't get enough love while they were released in theaters during the year of our Lord 2019. So, Nick...
That's weird.
So, Nick,
remember, we try to not bring up politics or religion. And what do you do in the first segment? Jesus.
Right. Nick, how about you kick us off? What is your number five underappreciated film of the year?
Number five underappreciated film of the year is probably going to be my most biased pick. It's the first movie we ever reviewed for the show, and is the movie that Dan and I both got each other for Christmas, Greta.
Dude, I honestly, since you brought that up, when I had that package in my hand, I low-key thought it was going to be Dora.
It almost was. It was really close to being Dora.
I'm so glad that I bought you Greta instead of Dora now. Like,
So fun fact, behind-the-scenes thing. Dan and I decided, you know, since we do this podcast, like, hey, let's get each other Christmas presents just because we unofficially work together, it seems like. So I bought Dan Greta on Blu-ray, and I had it shipped to his address. And then I'm at home, and Dan's like, hey, I bought your stuff. It'll be showing up. Neither of us were smart enough to put, like, if Dan shipped it to me, he didn't put Dan Brown. He put Nick Mahan. And if I shipped it to Dan, I didn't put Nick Mahan, I put Dan Brown. So this package shows up, and it's shaped and feels like a movie package. And I was like, I'm pretty sure this was supposed to be going straight to Dan. Like, I remember specifically taking time to make sure it went to him. And I open it up, and it's Greta. And I just, like, I sat there for a second, and I was like, well, I ordered it from Walmart, and this is an Amazon package. So I texted Dan. I was like, hey, is one of the things you got me Greta? And he goes, maybe. And I was like, well, this is one of those instances where you can straight up tell me if you did, because if not, I don't know why this showed up at my house. And then, like, he's still waiting on the second thing I got him. But he's like, yeah, I got a package here from you. Or I got a package here that you say was from you. And I was like, open it up. And then I just get, oh, my God, did you seriously get me Greta too? So, just a heads up, a re-review of that or a commentary track probably coming up soon.
Oh, dude, I'm so excited for... I mean, we'll make more concrete plans down the road, but Greta's not on my list, by the way.
Something Greta's coming up. We can agree on that.
Oh, yeah. Come this March, around our anniversary, whatever we figure out in the next 3 months, Greta is going to be back on the show again. Again, it's not on my list, so I'm not going to talk about it right now, but... yeah, that's just what we've been going through for the past month. Like, aside from that second package that inexplicably got lost in the mail,
but said it was delivered.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Anyway, that's not for the show. Anyway, you keep talking about Greta.
Yeah. Anyway, so this one is my most biased and kind of unfair one for this list, just because Greta has such a huge place in my heart in terms of, you know, it's what started this off. And personally, I think it's I think it's not like a contender for, you know, oh, this is one of the best representatives of a movie this year. But it was just a blast to watch. Now, granted, if we had watched this maybe like 3 or 4 months into the show, maybe we wouldn't have liked it as much. Although I think Ma was close to that amount of time, and I liked Ma.
Ma's a little bit more fun than this movie was. I'm not gonna lie.
I thought you were saying Ma has one big glaring difference. What's the difference, Dan? Yeah. What is the big glaring difference?
I don't know if Charlotte Rampling has an Oscar or not. Actually, I can't remember that offhand. But anyway, finish your thoughts.
Yeah, I really like Ma. It means a lot to us, but to me personally, I had a really good time watching it. I'm gonna be rewatching it with my family sometime soon, just to be like, you got to see the insanity that is this movie.
Oh, nice.
yeah, so that's my number five.
All right, fantastic. My number five was a movie that I just talked about very recently in a solo review. I don't think this movie has gotten that much love in the slew of award season and all these lists coming out of like best of this, worst of that. I think this movie's kind of been pushed away on the wayside, as is the case with a lot of these movies that I'll be talking about for underappreciated. My number five, again, I just talked about this, maybe not even a month ago. It is the Amazon Studios original film, The Report. It's funny.
No wonder that's not on my list.
Okay. I
didn't see it.
I watch, well, because you're lame and don't have Amazon, because you're so beholden to eBay.
eBay is king.
Amazon is king. I'm talking to you through an Amazon tablet right now. and they may or may not be my employer.
Jeff Bezos owns your soul.
He owns my wallet at the moment. The Report, when I watched it, I hadn't seen Marriage Story yet, which also stars Adam Driver, and I remember at the time I thought that it was arguably the best performance of Adam Driver's career. I thought Scott Z. Burns, kind of in the shadow but also kind of emulating the way that Steven Soderbergh directs his films, tackled a serious subject matter and made it in a way that was thrilling, informative, and digestible enough to take something so complex as the CIA torture report and made it something that, yes, it's dramatized, but it's also touching on a lot of important points of how serious and how big this was in the early to mid 2010s, which we're closing out on in this episode. But anyway, it's all led by his performance. Annette Bening, she got a Golden Globe nomination for this performance, which I didn't think she necessarily deserved per se. But that reservation aside, the writing, direction, and again, the lead performance of Adam Driver alone are worth seeing this movie. If you have Amazon Prime, watch it. If you don't have Amazon Prime, there's a lot of other movies aside from The Report that you should watch on there, including The Time Machine we just watched not too long ago, No Way Out. just get Amazon Prime, watch The Report. It is one of the best films of the year. I don't think enough people are talking about it. Even though, yes, the Black Sites have been touched on in numerous films over this decade that's now closing out. Just the Report is one of the better outright dramatizations of this situation, for lack of a better word. There have been many documentaries about it, like I can't remember the Errol Morris documentary offhand, but yes, it's been in documentaries. But again, in terms of dramatization, this is probably the best film I've ever seen about the torture that the CIA did, and I'm throwing my two cents out there that it needs to be seen by everybody. So yeah, my number five is The Report.
My number four is Ma. So this one, again, my list, I don't really know if my list is, you know, these are movies where it's like, man, these should get attention for being films of the year. I look at my list and I don't think that. But my list, what I see is I see films that when they came out were kind of like unexpectedly good, and then like a big tentpole film came out, and the hype for that was so big that
it just kind of overshadowed it.
Yeah, these films got overshadowed. Ma, I think, got overshadowed. Like you said earlier, this was more enjoyable than Greta.
Yes.
I remember, like, I think the second week of the show, maybe the third, I got a trailer for it, and I was like, oh, it's just, what if Ma was a horror movie? Or what if Greta was a horror movie?
Right.
It was really fun. I had a blast watching it. I actually got it for Christmas.
Oh, no kidding. So, dude, yeah, hold on. Sidebar, you have to tell me what the deleted scenes and the alternate ending are. Please tell me what they are.
For Ma?
Yes.
For Ma or for Greta?
No, Greta doesn't have any bonus features. Or very little.
I mean, it might.
I mean, very little.
Oh,
okay. But no, Ma, I know Ma was advertised specifically to have an alternate ending on its Blu-ray. So you got to tell me what that ending is.
Okay. The alternate ending is all of a sudden she grows wings and then she turns around and has Nicolas Cage's head. And then you can hear him saying, Padme, help me. By the way, did you watch that video I sent you today where they break down that you can hear Hayden Christensen in episode 3 say something quiet and you can see his mouth move and the guy boosts the audio and you can hear Hayden Christensen saying something like, Padme, help me, right before the mask goes on him?
Oh, no, shoot, I'm sorry, no, I didn't see that yet. I saw you sent me that, but I just...
When we're done, watch it. When we're done doing this, watch it, because it's really messed up.
Okay, no, I will watch that while we're in between segments.
But, yeah, back to the point. Ma is one movie that... I can't think what the tentpole movie is that came out around it, but I feel like when it came out, like, it got advertised like crazy. I do remember seeing this trailer before a ton of movies this year, but it came out and then it just kind of sat there and disappeared. And for as enjoyable of a movie it is, I find that to be kind of a shame. So that's why it makes my number four. Is I was like, you know, it is a really good time. It's not going to compete for really any awards or anything where it's like, oh, this is one of the better movies of the year. But it is one of the more enjoyable movies of the year because it does follow a ton of cliches. There's a lot of stereotypical characters in the movie, but it also is a good time. I think it's about as well executed as a movie like this could be.
I'll agree. I remember now, it came out on that Super Stuffed weekend where, on the very rare occasion where we cut the time machine, we watched...
Oh, yeah, this is when I had the trouble at the theater with Rocket Man, where the projector just broke.
Yeah, it was Rocket...
Because Godzilla King of the Monsters came out. That's what all the talk about was that week, was Godzilla.
Yeah, it was Godzilla, Rocket Man, and Ma, and we cut the time machine that weekend instead of deciding to split the episode into two parts for some reason.
No, we did split it into two parts.
No, it was...
We had a Brownie Bite segment and three movie reviews.
I thought it was just one big episode. I didn't think we split that one up.
I don't think we split it up. I think that was the first split up.
Okay, maybe I'm wrong, but no, I remember specifically it was the last week in May because all three of those came out, and I told you, dude, this is our biggest weekend we've had so far, like, because we're not skipping any of these movies. but yeah, no, I agree with you. I did enjoy Ma. It was way better than it had any right to be, and really, it is...
Yes, way better than it should have been.
And it's all on Octavia Spencer. She gave a phenomenal performance, really. And it helped that she was directed by, I want to say his name was Taylor Schilling. I think that name might be wrong, but he got her an Oscar for The Help. I do know that. It is from the director of The Help. And I think that chemistry between them to figure out who the character was really carried that movie to the heights that it had no right to be in. So yeah. I'm glad that's on your list. It didn't make my list personally, but no, I did enjoy Ma.
Well, your list I kind of expect to be the list where it's like, hey, these are movies that aren't getting talked about for movie of the year and they deserve to be. My list is movies got kind of brushed aside.
Oh no. The rest of my list, especially my next pick, is another one that I feel like nobody gave a crap about when it came out.
What's your next one?
My next film is one that I talked about on our surprising list, Alita: Battle Angel, because I literally can't stop talking about
back
this movie.
Back to the first episode.
Yeah, seriously. Honestly, the first episode of this show, I saw three movies I've literally thought about since we
said. As big of a train wreck, and as much as it doesn't sound like the show currently, there were some big surprises.
Oh, dude, the first week that we started the show, I went out of my way and did three solo reviews, and I really, really liked all three of the films. And they've stuck with me literally the entire year, which is saying something for. We started this in late February, early March. but this one specifically, Alita, I've sung praises on this before. It is going to be a time machine film whenever it is going to be a time machine film because you have to see this movie. Alita is great. This movie has no right to be as good as it is. The visual effects are beautiful. The lead performance from the girl, I don't have her name in front of me, but really the biggest thing is
Craig Ferguson.
No, the lead actress does not sound like Shrek. honestly, just her performance is great. Christoph Waltz's performance is great. Robert Rodriguez, this might be my favorite movie I've seen of his in a very, very long time. This is my favorite James Cameron film I've seen in a very long time, too, because he was a producer on this. They did such a great job with... I don't know how true they stayed to the source material, but... I mean, if this is, just even more kudos to them. They made a hell of a fantastic action movie, and were able to find a way to stick so much lore in so much... It has exposition moments, but it doesn't really bog the film down. Like, it's this weird enigma that I've said before. There is so much talking and there's so much information about this world thrown at you. Well, at the same time, it doesn't slow down the pace. It doesn't take away from how great the action sequences are. And it leaves you with a cliffhanger that I would love to see the sequel. But literally no one saw this movie, so one, Fox wasn't going to fund a sequel anyway, and now that they're bought up by Disney, now that's more or less guaranteed to not happen if it wasn't guaranteed already. Like, just the weird singular enigma that was Alita: Battle Angel, even though it really does demand a sequel, and I wish we would, maybe down the line we will, I don't know, maybe it's like 10 years from now.
That reminds me of a thing I saw in this chapter critic one time. I wish you would.
Honestly, I wish a year or two down the line, I could relish in the fact that, like, we're going to get a sequel to this movie. But I guess even knowing that we're not, I'll take it for what it is. Alita is one of the most underappreciated films of this year, and I went in fully expecting this movie to be really bad, and sure, take that bias along with my reaction, but go rent Alita. If it's streaming, go stream Alita. Just watch this movie and be happy and be filled with the regret that you didn't pay $15 to go see it in the cinema, because you should have, because this movie deserves a sequel. It's a great movie.
My number three is a movie that we didn't go see in theaters. A Breaking Bad movie.
Oh, nice. Okay.
I remember when this movie came out, it got a lot of praise. It got a lot of rave reviews, and it lasted a week, and then no one talked about it afterward. I don't know what happened, but it's almost like people went, oh my god, on to the next Breaking Bad.
Dude, that's standard with Netflix movies, really.
Yeah. But I really love that movie. I got sucked back in, like I was back into Albuquerque, New Mexico, with Vomino's Pest. I mean, it just picked up right where it was before. And I mean, I know we had criticisms of the movie where, it could have been better, but at the same time, it's still fantastic. I really enjoyed the movie. I thought that Aaron Paul slipped right back into the Jesse Pinkman role. I thought Discount Matt Damon sunk right back into the Todd role.
I'm going to teach you his name. He has a name.
Oh, I know it. I know the name. I just don't care.
I like that. Hold on. Just in retrospect, I love that he replaced the guy that we saw, 3 weeks in a row, right when we started this movie, and Death Sentence and Triple Frontier and, whatever we called him. Discount Matt Damon.
Matt Damon.
Jesse Plemons. That's his name.
Yeah. I know it's Jesse Plemons. I just don't care. He's Discount Matt Damon. I'm a big fan of this movie. I think that the biggest crime that happened to the movie is just, like I said, after a week, no one talked about it anymore. I really wish that, more people had. I don't know if it's like you said, if it's because it's a Netflix thing. I don't know if something big came out, or the fact that it really wasn't advertised that much. But yeah, big fan of this movie. I think it's very underrated, and I think more people should be talking about it.
I don't have a definitive answer as to what necessarily, like, kind of killed the talk around it. I think that's just kind of the way Netflix films go. If you
Matt Damon buried the movie.
I think that, like, when it comes...
Tell him stop talking about Discount Me.
I think really just the fact that, like, it was released on Netflix. It was shot in secret. There was no advertising campaign for it. Obviously, those are factors with it. But to me...
It's literally the biggest movie of the year that had no hype.
Well, that's the thing. Like, they did that deliberately. There was... this guy's controversial, but that's what Louis C.K. did with his Hulu show. It wasn't made for Hulu, but it's now on Hulu if you want to watch it. Horace and Pete, he just released an episode of that out of the blue, only sent it to people who were subscribing to his email newsletter, and said, hey, I made a thing, watch it, let me know if you like it. And as they kept coming out, that's when, after the second episode, after the third episode, that's when it finally started making onto Entertainment Weekly and Variety. He started going to Press Junket, talking about why he didn't advertise it, why he shot it in secret, things like that. So,
why didn't you advertise this? Are you kidding me?
Well, he wanted to, for budgetary reasons and just strictly for his fans, he wanted to see if his fans were loyal enough that it didn't matter that he didn't have an advertising budget, so he could just make more profit, which, strictly from a capitalistic standpoint, It worked out fantastic. He made a buttload of money from that movie, from that series, because his fans came through, and at the time, before he got Me Too'd, it caught fire in the best way imaginable, even though for the first 2 weeks, sure, nobody watched, or maybe a handful of people watched it, and it went through word of mouth. El Camino, there was the murmurs and the rumors that, like, yes, Vince Gilligan wants to do something, but we didn't know what was going to happen, and then it just kind of came out of the blue, to which I then want to segue back into the Netflix model.
It hit us like we were driving a car that had been freshly washed and a bird pooped on it, and then wham, Dave Chappelle.
Pretty much. Like, but that's the thing with Netflix. Like, it's the flavor of the week. It's your 7 minutes in the spotlight. Like, I am going to push a little bit. I don't think it's great. I think it is a good epilogue. I don't think it outshines the finale episode, but it is a nice, well-constructed, well-crafted...
I don't think it was meant to, though. I think it does exactly what it set out for.
Yeah, and again, it is serviceable, it is entertaining, it is worth watching, but no, it's not better than the finale, but yeah, maybe it wasn't supposed to outshine the finale. This was just... Vince wanted to tell the story of Jesse. A lot of people wanted to know what happened to Jesse, and fortunately, he was able to be hands-on and tell us what happened to Jesse as the definitive, I created Breaking Bad, I have the final say, this is what happened to Jesse. And it's good.
Matt Damon.
It's good. It's not great, but it's good. So, yeah, I mean, sorry, that's my 2 cents on it, but...
that's fine. You hate Breaking Bad. It's cool. What's your number 3?
Oh my god. Okay. Well, Brownie TV coming soon. anyway, my next film god. My next film is the comedy Good Boys. I was personally an enormous fan of this film. Sorry?
That's interesting because I heard nothing but praise about
this. Well, here's the thing. I don't think this film has gotten enough praise. Given, not to spoiler what my top 10 of the year list is, but yes, it just missed my list, honestly. But I guess I'm just asking the ether to remember this movie better than we did now. Like, yes, it does have a lot of positive...
Cue up the Sarah McLachlan.
Yes, I want this movie to be remembered more now than it...
Good Boys.
That was beautiful. I'm shedding a tear.
It's because your eardrum ruptured.
Yeah. I just want this movie to... I guess... I hope this movie ages like a fine wine and more people discover it than we did now. Like, yes, a lot of people liked it. Yes, a lot of people thought it was good. I thought it was great. I cried laughing throughout the movie. I thought all three of the kids were great. It did just miss my top 10 of the year list, but it is the funniest movie I've seen this year. Nothing against comedy as a genre, but it is the funniest movie I've seen this year.
You found it funnier than Invader Zim and the Porpoise? Which, by the way, that was an honorable mention that missed mine, but that was literally my number 6, with Invader Zim.
Oh, that's hard for me to judge objectively, honestly. I could not honestly, like, I did enjoy it, but it was very, very, very hard for me to watch that movie objectively, so I didn't even think of that for my list, really. I just became 12 again and was just watching it and just laughing my butt off just because we got Invader Zim again. And thankfully, Johan Vasquez was the writer and the director of it, so it just flowed like we didn't skip a beat. But again, these three kids in Good Boys were so perfectly cast. All the random supporting characters in the film, the two teenagers were hilarious. Stephen Merchant as the pedophile was the hardest I laughed in the movie.
There you go with pedophiles again, man.
Well, I guess with that, just find Good Boys, watch it. It is, I promise you, you're gonna laugh for 90 minutes straight. It's a great, great, great comedy. it is from Seth Rogen, but it's not like a Seth Rogen movie. There's no one going in smoking pot. It's, oh my God, it really, looking back at it now, especially since we're taping literally less than a week from 2020, it's still in my mind the best comedy of 2020, even though, yes, no, it's not in my top 10 of the year, but it is the funniest movie I saw this year. It's my favorite comedy.
All right, well, let me awkwardly go and fall as I transition. Brightburn is my number two.
Brightburn is on my list too.
Is it your number two?
Maybe.
Is it your number two?
Yes, Brightburn's my number two.
Okay. So Brightburn was a movie that when it started getting advertised, I got really excited about. I've always thought the idea for this story was very interesting of what if Superman was what Lex Luthor was kind of warning about, Batman v Superman, before he started being a nervous chihuahua. So, God, I hate that. But this movie was, I think, the first mobile review we did for the show.
Hopefully one of the last ones, too. Like, God forbid, I don't want you or myself to record in a car again.
So, if you guys couldn't tell, my car's turn signal goes off multiple times in that review. Because Kelsey was driving while I was using one phone to record myself and then using her phone to call Dan.
That was an interesting scenario for recording that one for sure. Yeah.
I was in St. Louis that weekend for a ball game and we just like didn't have time to record that review before I left. So I was like, well, I got an hour that I'm going to be in the car on this day. We can lock this review down. So. Back to the actual movie. I really enjoyed the movie. It's not perfect, but it is, I wouldn't even say an original idea, but it's a unique idea that I felt was executed very well. I'm interested to see, cause it does sequel bait. There's no way around it.
Oh, there's no way we're getting a sequel though. I would be willing to bet money we're not getting a Brightburn 2.
Which pisses me off because, man, this movie does deserve one. They didn't sequel bait it and like fumble it and screw it up. They just got like no return on their investment for this movie.
I think honestly, kind of in the same vein of Chronicle, where it I mean, did you see Chronicle first off?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, cool.
Chronicle's a great movie.
Oh, it is. Chronicle's great. I kind of like in the same vein that thought of Chronicle and Brightburn just kind of being their own singular thing, kind of the opposite of Alita, where I want a sequel to Alita. I can live with the idea of not getting a sequel to Brightburn or Chronicle. Like, I think just as its own one-off kind of very subtle satire, even though it plays itself very, very dead seriously. And again, the lead performances from the guy from Parks and Rec and Elizabeth Banks are great. The kid is great also. I love the kid.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, do you know who he played in Avengers Endgame? Just a fun fact.
I'm trying to think of what he looked like.
Do you want me to just go ahead and tell you?
Was it one of Hawkeye's kids?
No, he was the teenage Scott Lang when he was experimenting with the time machine.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, I think he popped out and said, guys, I don't think this worked, or something like that.
And then he started peeing lasers.
But yeah, I just, I don't know, something about this in the way that, like, it is kind of a satire, even though it's not played for comedy whatsoever, and it just owned...
It's like an angry satire, really.
It owned this idea of just like, okay, what if Superman was evil, and we played it as dead serious as possible, and we had gore, we had blood, we had some serious hardcore violence in this movie. I don't know.
We had mental torture.
There was a vision to this movie that came across so strong, and I think just because of its release date, I feel like that hindered it more than anything else, and I agree with you. This was definitely one of the better films of the year.
That was Labor Day weekend.
What was
that
it?
That was Labor Day, or is it Labor Day weekend?
Oh,
which
no.
Which the one in May?
Oh, no, I was still in New York. It was before summer.
No, because I remember I was in St. Louis for a baseball game, and I went... It was May 25th was when we recorded the review, because that was the day of the game. So is that Labor Day or Memorial Day? I don't remember.
Hold on. I'm pulling up our episode list, because I feel like I know I was in New York when I saw this. I want to say it was the same weekend I saw Aladdin.
It was, because I remember you saying,
"Oh,
do you want to record?"
It was the weekend before Ma. It was literally the episode before Ma.
Yeah, because I remember you saying, do you want to stick around to do the Aladdin review? And I was like, nah, man. My exact words to you were, nah, man, I gotta go get my shield and battle armor and go buy Blues Conference Championship hats and t-shirts.
Right, that's right.
Which is my exact words to you.
To which you've still not seen Aladdin. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, but I got that hat and shirt, so...
Right.
Fair trade.
Well, I mean, unless you have anything else to add on Brightburn, I mean, I agree with you. It's a great movie. You definitely need to see it.
I will say this. I think it deserves more attention than most DC Universe films.
All of them, except you all need to see Batman vs. Superman just for the sake of conversation.
It's one of those movies where, you know... It's honestly a better Superman movie than most recent Superman movies, and it's supposed to be, what if Superman wasn't Superman?
Well, one could argue that was Man of Steel 2, which is, what if Superman was literally Jesus?
Am I supposed to just let them die? Maybe. Thanks, Kevin Costner. Are they...
Oh, God.
What else are you going to tell me about? Oh, I saw this one thing about how Mongolians farmed. Tornadoes.
Dude, do you want to watch... Which one would you rather do for the time machine? Superman Returns or Man of Steel?
Oh, Man of Steel, then Batman v Superman. I've never seen Superman Returns.
You've never seen Superman Returns?
Fun fact, I don't really watch... I've really only seen Man of Steel or Superman movies.
Okay, hold on. You've made a great case. That honestly makes a great case to add both of them onto the time machine list. I own Man of Steel. I don't own Superman Returns. So if it's streaming, that's kind of my hindrance on it. But I own Man of Steel. So like, if you're willing to rent it, like, I'm willing to skyrocket Man of Steel up to the top of the list.
I own Man of Steel.
Oh, okay. Well, okay. No, we'll talk about it off mic. I'm not going to let that stop what we're going to watch next week. So, but no, I'm going to keep that in mind. We're going to watch Man of Steel for the show.
All right. My number one is a movie that will most likely be on my top 10 of the year list. It's a movie that has no reason to be as good as it is, and was one of the bigger surprises of the year for how good it was. I think we talked about it on my surprises of the year list. It's been a couple weeks since then, and we didn't write those down. But Ready or Not.
Oh, that's a great movie. Sorry.
I laughed so hard during that movie. It was so unbelievably enjoyable to watch, and I can't wait to see it again. I can't wait to own it. I had such a fun time watching that movie. I thought all the acting performances in it were just you know, right where they needed to be. So yeah, it's my number two for most underrated for the year.
Wait, you're number two or you're number one?
Number one, I'm sorry.
No worries. I'm pulling up my number one, even though... Nope, sorry, I should have had this memorized. Well, let me just add, I do agree that Ready or Not is great. Definitely watch it. The ensemble's awesome. The twist ending is audaciously...
Explosive?
What?
Explosively hilarious?
Sure, for one way to phrase it. It's audaciously hilarious and unexpected, and... I want to say her name is Tamara Weaving. I think that might be wrong, but she was great in the lead. Yeah, I didn't expect to like Ready or Not as much as I did either. I think you definitely liked it more than I did, but...
Oh, I loved it.
I will endorse with you that Ready or Not is a movie that you definitely should see. Ready or Not was comedy horror at its best. So, yes, my number one is a movie I know you don't like, and it's a movie that I absolutely love, and I...
Oh my god, is it Zombieland 2?
No! No, I honestly did think about putting Zombieland as number five, but I decided not to. I didn't like it that much. I did like it, but I didn't like it that much.
I was gonna say, I was like, man, I didn't think you liked it that much.
No, I didn't like Zombieland 2 enough. I did like it, but I didn't like it that much. I thought it was funny, though, since you brought it up. Okay. my number one was arguably one of our most contentious reviews of the show, if not probably since Easy Rider or Clockwork Orange. Ad Astra. Ad Astra is my most underappreciated film of the year.
You think it's underrated?
Brad Pitt is only getting Oscar consideration for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and...
Okay. I get where you're coming from, then.
Yes, he's only getting Oscar consideration for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which he deserves. He's arguably the best actor in that movie, yes. And that's a great performance, but I think that the way that Disney has carried this film, with the great reviews mostly that it had, the excellent... direction that it had, the really emotional story that it had as well, the great supporting performance that I had from Tommy Lee Jones when he does show up in the film. We talked about it before. I love the way that it interprets this future where kind of space travel is commercialized. I love the emotional complexity of this character that Brad Pitt has, where he's got all this emotional baggage, but he's also carrying the baggage of just, like, he's living in the shadow of his father that apparently just went crazy, and he's the cause of this disaster that's going to wipe out humanity. All the
he's
way that it...
in the shadow realm.
All the way that it builds up to this emotional climax, I was completely on board with it. I love the performances in the film. I love the payoff. I love the way it looks. I think the film is directed beautifully. I think it's shot beautifully. The visual effects are jaw-dropping. It's on Blu-ray now. I believe it's on Blu-ray now. And absolutely rent it. Watch it. Watch it on the biggest screen that you can. Ad Astra is absolutely worth watching. Definitely go seek it out. I want this movie to get more attention than it did before, and I guess it's just going to – we'll just have to see how it stands the test of time. I want to put my foot down as it is the most underappreciated film of 2019 in my book, because I feel like not that many people love it as much as I do, admittedly. But again, it did have great – it did have mostly positive reviews. I think it was certified fresh, but I just – I don't want people to forget about Ad Astra. So, yep, that's my number one underappreciated movie of 2019. So, I mean, do you have any kind of thoughts or rebuttal before we move on?
No. Like in our review, I understand why people will say it's one of the best of the year and why everything in it's so great. It's not my kind of movie. But I can understand where you're coming from. It that it's underrated. Brad Pitt's not getting any recognition. So
it's kind of
other than that. No, I got nothing else to add.
It's kind of like back in 2007 when Leonardo DiCaprio released Blood Diamond and The Departed, and the Academy was just like, okay.
Man, The Departed was 2007?
Yeah, and the Academy was just like, okay, well, you can only legally be put up for one movie, Blood Diamond or The Departed. And they decided to go with Blood Diamond because he had a South African accent in that movie instead of The Departed. So I guess it kind of makes sense that, like, okay, the movie that everyone's talking about, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, versus Ad Astra that people like but no one's talking about. So I kind of get it, like, but I just don't want people to forget that Brad Pitt actually had two phenomenal performances this year, and I just, sure, I mean, maybe I'm just standing on a soapbox, but Brad Pitt gave one of the best performances of the year in Ad Astra.
Maybe I'm standing on a soapbox, and maybe it's the most small and pointless soapbox of all time.
Oh, probably. I just, I love that performance, and I don't want people to forget that he had two great films this year, and not just one. So with that, we are going to take a very, very brief break, and we will come back with our review of the movie that we saw in theaters this week, Adam Sandler's drama Uncut Gems. We will be right back. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Nick and I only saw one movie in theaters this weekend to close out 2019. That movie was from the Safdie brothers, Benny and Josh, and it is their follow-up to 2017's Good Times, Uncut Gems.
The not-so-good times.
Yeah, well, not to say that Good Times had exactly happy ending either, but yes, we went and saw, to close out the year, Uncut Gems, starring the one and only comedy genius Adam Sandler, also starring
not,
in the film.
Not being Adam Sandler.
Oh, far from it. this film also starred Julia Fox, Kevin Garnett, The Weeknd, and Lakeith Stanfield from Atlanta, and, as John Travolta would say it, Adele Dazeem, when her real name is Idina Menzel.
Philip Morris.
Idina Menzel, she won a Tony for the original Broadway production of Wicked, if you did not know that, and her name is not Adele Dazeem, but anyway, obviously, first and foremost, we have to talk about Adam Sandler. I don't know if this is your first foyer into Adam Sandler in dramas, but...
No, my first one was Rain Over Me.
Oh, okay. That one I actually haven't seen. My first Adam Sandler drama was Punch Drunk Love, the Paul Thomas Anderson film.
Okay.
And a quick anecdote on that. It was funny because in interviews he's had since that movie, he's also directed There'll Be Blood and Inherent Vice and some crazy, super dark, dramatic movies. And he also made a movie with Adam Sandler. And literally, since Punch Drunk Love came out...
Punch Drunk Love.
Yeah. Since Punch Drunk Love came out, he has said that, no, this wasn't anything that, like, was out of my wheelhouse or, like, anything that, like, yes, I wanted to make a movie with Adam Sandler, but it wasn't that I exactly wrote this, like, with him in mind, like, in any kind of weird, nothing called out to me with that character for him, other than the fact that I like his movies and I wanted to make a movie with him. Literally, it wasn't anything about the character, like, that drew him to Adam Sandler. He always wrote that movie with Adam in mind because he likes Adam Sandler movies, and he wanted to make a movie with Adam Sandler. So, like, so this that movie came out in, like, 2003. That movie came out after Big Daddy and Happy Madison and Happy Gilmore and Billy Madison and, like, all his, like, peak movies. And Paul Thomas Anderson, the guy that would go on to make There Will Be Blood, was just like, yeah, I want to make a movie with Adam Sandler. And it hit
I like
a
comedy
home...
sometimes.
Oh, and it hit a home run. Like that, and, I mean, I didn't see Rain Over Me. What did you think of Rain Over Me? Like a straightforward, serious movie, right?
Yeah, it's been a while since I've seen it. We were living in Columbus when I saw it, and I remember we had our standard def TV when I saw it. So that was, before high school. So it's been a while since I've seen that. It was on, I think it was on TV. I thought he was very good. I think I've seen one or two other ones too, but I don't remember what they were. But when Adam Sandler's not Gabba Goop guy, I think he's a good actor. Something I've heard a lot of stand-up comics talk about, not necessarily from like an acting perspective, but just like a personal perspective. They not necessarily have a lot of demons, but a lot of them can embrace darker, like darker sides of stuff. They're fascinated by the dark, like dark things. And Sandler, when he tackles serious roles, you know, he really kind of leans into like someone with pretty severe demons. And I think he does a very good job in this movie. One thing I want to point out, because I know it's not getting a ton of recognition, Kevin Garnett actually gives a pretty good performance for an athlete.
Oh, dude, Kevin Garnett was like, awesome in this movie. Yeah.
Like, there are several times where I'm like, oh yeah, you're a pro athlete, right? Because this line delivery isn't the worst thing I've ever heard ever since Cats.
Dude, his chemistry with Lakeith Stanfield and him holding his own against Adam Sandler, and let's just say it, he is an acting veteran since the late 80s, and Kevin Garnett is coming into his feature film debut, and he is awesome in the movie. He was so good.
I can't give examples because that would be spoilers, but yeah, dude, he's very good whenever he has to act.
Finish your thoughts, and then I want to give our ratings and just jump right into spoiler sections, really. Like,
aside from, you know, the good acting, this movie gave me such severe anxiety. The movie ended, and I looked at the guy that was sitting next to me. I don't know this man, and I just looked at him, and I went, I need drugs. And he started laughing, and I was like, you know, like Xanax or whatever an anti-anxiety medicine is. Like, my God, man. I was getting very worried.
And then he took his hand out of his pocket.
I was texting Kelsey after I got home, and I was like, that movie made me so anxious about stuff that going into it, I wasn't even anxious about. And I was like, for example, watching the movie, I felt like I was going to fall behind on my mortgage. I don't have a mortgage.
It made you feel like you were going to get – or shoot. Nope. Sorry. I can't say what I wanted to say because that's a spoiler. dang it. Yeah, sorry. Man. Anyway.
God, man.
Finish your hot take.
It's just so worried about every single thing in this movie. I don't know. You know the awards better than me. I don't know what award this would be, but I'm going to describe it how I know to. Whatever the award is for best establishment and knockout of a setting and a tone, whatever award that is, this movie needs to win that. Because, look, man, I've watched in the past year, I've watched my team in two game sevens. One game seven was in the finals. I've gotten engaged. I've had some pretty big life events go on. And I know I just listed my engagement after watching my team in the playoffs. Sorry, Kelsey, but
chronological
you're
order.
You're first in my heart. But, yeah, like, I've had a lot of, like, worrisome things in the past year in my life, and this movie, like, made all of those come into my mind. Like, I was just, if I wasn't in such a packed theater, I probably would have had my feet on my seat, my arms wrapped around my knees, and I would have been rocking back and forth because I was so nervous about stuff. This movie gets sprinkles for me. It's freaking amazing. I will say, we didn't announce it, but we almost went and saw Bombshell, and I realized that after actually buying my ticket for Bombshell, Uncut Gems was playing at a different theater in Lafayette. I'm so glad we didn't go see Bombshell. I'm not saying that movie's bad, and I'm not gonna rip on that movie because I didn't see it and I don't know what it's like. But this is one of the best movies of the year, and I'm really glad we chose to see this over any other movie.
I'm also glad we saw this over Bombshell. Just certain things about Bombshell, like, I do want to see it and talk about it on the show with you at some point, but given that we're recording this...
But this movie?
Well, given that we're recording this after a big holiday, and we got another holiday coming up, technically, when you all are listening to this, this will be the first episode to come out in 2020, even though we're recording this...
New Year's isn't till Wednesday.
Right, my bad. This will be the last episode of 2019, sorry. To close out 2019, I'm...
Have some anxiety. Worry about your life. Your cholesterol's high, and... you have polyps that you don't know about, and do you have a mortgage? Doesn't matter. You're about to be behind on it.
Yeah, I'm all those anxieties within this film, and just the fact that we got to see Adam Sandler of all people put out such a freaking showstopper of a dramatic performance. Like, I'm not gonna go ahead and go out there and say that, like, it's the best performance of the year. I really want to take it in. Like, again, Nick and I saw this movie just an hour ago, and
yeah.
I definitely see why he's in the Oscar race. He was phenomenal in this movie. He was so good. He deserves to be up there with Adam Driver and Joaquin Phoenix and Robert De Niro and Leonardo DiCaprio and whoever else they keep talking about in the award circuit. I can't remember all the names offhand, but
Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, Nicolas Cage for Primal.
That's pretty good acting because there's obviously nothing there.
Right. But again, all joking aside, Adam Sandler was so good. This film from the Safdie brothers. If you'd seen Good Times or any of their other films up to this point, you get exactly...
What about when you... by the way, what about when you texted me earlier today and you were like, this is your first Safdie Brothers movie, right? And I was like, I'm gonna know.
Well, okay, full disclosure, I haven't seen any of their films besides Good Times, and I only saw that on Amazon Prime, about a year ago now, because it came out in...
Dan's like, I only saw it on a dare, because someone's like, I think it's a good date movie.
Yeah, if only. if only. I did actually. I missed it in theaters, and I ended up seeing it on Prime. But sidebar, it is a great Robert Pattinson film. Like I recommended The Lighthouse, you should also watch Good Times, and that is actually on Prime right now for free. Well, if you have Prime, but yeah, and go rent The Lighthouse if you haven't seen that yet either. So that's my Robert Pattinson plug of the episode. So. But anyway, like Nick was saying, this movie is just great. Adam Sandler carries this movie in a virtually unrecognizable way that he carries any of his films. It's such a rare treat to see him go out of his normal, like, Jack and Jill or Pixels wheelhouse. And that's something I love and hate about him is that, like... He can act like this, but he just refuses to more than once every leap year. You can act. Why don't you do more movies like this, Adam? Drives me crazy.
Adam, why don't you try more?
Adam, I get it. You make, like, at least $20 million minimum from Grown Ups 2. And sure, you don't have to do this. This is just something you probably did on a whim. But, God, why don't you do
this
more often?
Stop having whims.
Why do we have to go through five movies that are utter garbage before we get one movie with you actually being a good actor? Well,
it was interesting, like, whenever he would go to the premieres and the red carpet events for his movies coming out that were, you know, when he was going through, like, making the worst movie of the year every year for, like, five straight years. But when he would go to the red carpet events for those movies and they took pictures of him, like, the last two, he looked like he hated his life.
Dude,
I just find it funny that eventually those movies wore him down too.
Well, he's really an introvert, really. Like, this is right now, yeah. This is the most press I've ever seen him go on. I mean, maybe I don't have the greatest memory, but I've never seen him go on press more than he has for this movie.
I remember 8 Crazy Nights got a lot of press, but just because it was an Adam Sandler movie, it was an animated Adam Sandler movie, and then also it was a Hanukkah movie, so it really was so different. And maybe that's why it got so much press. But yeah, the only other Adam Sandler movie I can think of that was, you know, this press worthy was that one.
I literally can't think of another movie, honestly. Like, and honestly, 8 Crazy Nights, what, that was, what, 2003 or 4? That was, like, 15 years ago.
Like, 03, 04.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a while ago.
Honestly, just, I mean, unless I just missed press for any of the movies that were bad, well, that ended up being quote-unquote bad. Hi, Bethy. Yes, we're talking about Pixels.
Beth hates Hanukkah.
Oh, Beth is just adorable. Hi, baby.
Adorably hates Hanukkah.
But no, anyway, God, I'll finish my hot takes. We can finally go to the spoiler section. Sorry.
Hey, guess what? Dan made something long-winded.
I actually love... I agree with Nick. I absolutely love this movie. It is incredibly anxious. It's very much just a biting your nails kind of thriller. You kind of can't help but cheer for him while also,
continuously root against him.
There's so many points of the film where, like, I honestly, yeah, no, I couldn't. Like, this guy is so over his head, and he's got this hubris to him. While at the same time,
I kept having the thought of, how does this man function? And then it was followed up with, when is he going to commit suicide?
That leads to some questions I want to ask. Finally, I'll finish it. I love this movie. It also gave me a panic attack. I was on the edge of my seat the whole movie. Adam Sandler was great. Idina Menzel was awesome. I do not want to glance over her. Idina Menzel was great as his wife. I can't remember the last time I saw her, like, in a film, because she's primarily been, like, a stage actress and just a singer. And, dude, she acted so fantastic as his wife in the movie.
Was she his wife, or was she...
Not the mistress.
Was she a mistress because they were getting separated?
No, Idina Menzel was his wife that got him out of the car.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was Idina Menzel. She was great. I mean, I love the mistress, too. The mistress was great. The last actor I want to say before we go into spoiler territory was... how should I phrase this? The gangster that he owed money to?
Arno?
Was that the character's name?
Arno or the muscle that sounded like his throat was sore?
Oh, Arno. Yeah, it was Arno. Sorry.
Okay.
Eric Bogosian. Oh my God. This was another actor that I hadn't seen in a movie for a very, very, very long time. Just deep cut trivia. if any of you guys have seen Oliver Stone's talk radio, Eric Bogosian was the radio host who was in the movie for literally 95% of the movie. He was the talk radio host, and he's had a little bit of like bit roles here and there, like mostly TV, some film here and there, but nothing really as big as talk radio, at least to my knowledge. Feel free to email us otherwise. It was so great to see Eric in a predominant role in a movie again, because I'm sorry, I love talk radio, and I felt bad that I never got to see him really outside of anything besides, well, lo and behold, a late Christmas present. I got to see Eric Bogosian in a somewhat predominant, not quite lead, but a very important supporting role, and he killed it too. The entire ensemble is great in this movie. The Safdie brothers did a phenomenal job directing this movie. It is exhilarating. It is incredibly intense. You're not going to guess how it ends. And the fact that
I guessed how it ended.
And the fact that the Safdie brothers got...
Okay, so I guessed what would happen at the very end. I didn't guess the setting for the end, which we'll explain in spoilers, but I thought exactly what happened at the end was going to happen, because I was like, this movie's going to go there.
I was hoping what happened didn't happen, but that's how engrossed in the movie I was. The fact that it happened, and I literally screamed in the theater when it did. I don't know. We'll see if it gets in my top of the year list. I wrote my top, full disclosure, I wrote my top 10 of the year list three weeks ago. Well, sure, like 2-3 weeks ago, and I wasn't expecting anything else to get in, but now Uncut Gems is definitely going to push for consideration within the next couple days, so...
And we thought Cats would.
What? You thought Cats was going to be a best?
No.
Oh.
You did. Because it's artsy.
No! No, 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 no. I did not say Cats.
Sarcasm.
Okay. I was going to say... Sorry, that did not sound like sarcasm. I was about to just... Okay. All right, so... Anyway, yes, I also give Uncut Gems Sprinkles. And on our scale, a disaster like Cats is a movie that is so bad, you do not get any brownies, you get a cookie full of raisins. A pretty bad movie is a single brownie. A so-so 50-50 is a half pan of brownies. A... pretty good film overall is a full pan of brownies, and a borderline, if not outright masterpiece, is a full brownie pan with sprinkles, which is what both of us are giving Uncut Gems. So, Nick, now that we're in the spoiler section, listeners, go ahead and fast forward to the time machine. Look for the timestamp in the description for our thoughts on A Christmas Story, if you don't want to hear anything else about Uncut Gems. Where do you want to start now with the spoiler section?
When at the end of the movie, when he sells...
We're jumping straight to the end.
Well, to me, it's the big spoiler of the movie. At the end of the movie, when he sells the gem and he has the money... And then he decides he's not going to pay off his debts, even though he very easily could, and everything would stop being a problem, and he can just start over. And he takes the money, and he tells his mistress to go place a bet on a three-way parlay, and I don't understand the logic behind it, other than he's addicted to gambling. And he just, the rush of that, just when he does that, I literally just, my jaw dropped. And I was like, oh my God, just stop, dude. You have your out. You have your way to fixing your life. And you're throwing it away for literally no reason.
Dude, it's that hubris and that addiction. That is so, oh, that's so beautiful of this character, though. Like... I do agree. At the same time, I was just like, oh my god, why are you tripling down on this? Like,
it's like the Santa Claus scene in a Christmas Story. I was just like, wake up, stupid.
Oh, that's so funny.
Oh man.
Yeah. But dude,
God. As soon as he like starts talking to Kevin Garnett, I was like, oh, he's just explaining to him, like, you know, I'm not an athlete, so my competitive juices and thirst get quenched by doing this. I was like, oh, that's just what this is. And then he like keeps talking, and I was like, this is turning into something bad. And then he goes, we're gonna place all this money on you as a bet. And I was like, why is this a thing you're doing? Why don't do this anymore? You don't have to do this. You literally can choose to not do this and be 100% okay.
Dude, that was so intense when he had him in his office and Kevin is just like, dude, you're giving me the runaround this whole time. Which, by the way, he totally has been. And he took his NBA championship ring.
He is a degenerate gambler who does not know when to just, like, take the money and be okay with it. Like, that business plan of, okay, you can have this stone that... you can have this stone that's going to auction that I have to get there and be appraised just because you won it and you gave me your ring. I'm going to take your ring and I'm going to pawn it. I'm going to use the money I pawned it for to place a bet. And then after the bet is made, I'm not going to get your ring out right away. Well, actually, he was going to, but the guy that he owed money to stopped the bet. But, yeah, good God.
Dude, that was one of so many moments I legitimately, like, had my heart, like, stop. Like, when – I'll break it down real quick. Like, when he got kidnapped during his daughter's recital, and it turns out that Eric Bogosian stopped the bet, and it's just like, oh, my God. Like, I thought that was, like – I don't know, that being the first big twist of the movie, I was like, oh my god, this guy, he might actually die in this. But then the movie keeps going on, and then the second big twist was that at the auction, when he tells, what was that, his uncle or his cousin or something? I can't remember the family relation.
It was his dad. It was his dad.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. It was his father-in-law.
Okay, father-in-law. He tells his father-in-law, hey, Kevin Garnett's going to be here. You just got to get him to go up to $200,000. And then he has to buy it at, what, like
$190,000.
Yeah, and Kevin Garnett backs out, and he's just like, nah, I'm good. And it's just like...
Yeah. As soon as he says his idea, and he's like, I need you to drive up the price... Like we've said on here before, because Dan wants me to get Amazon Prime and I want eBay to just get their own streaming service. I eBay a lot of stuff.
That is literally never going to happen, by the way.
And I know the thrill of bidding on stuff on eBay, and I've never done it, but I'm sure it happens. People that just, like, try and drive up auctions to, like, to troll people. And then I'm sure it happens where, like, the auction drops. And it's like, oh, crap, now I have to pay that. And I was just sitting there. And as soon as he starts having his grandpa bid, it, like, got to 160. And I was like, all right, stop having grandpa bid. No more bidding for grandpa.
Dude, that makes me – that honestly, before the third time that my heart dropped was – it made me think of that Simpsons episode where – it was Bart, and it was just like, sold to the man over there. And Bart just ran out, and then was like, okay, well, the second person, it's yours. And then the second person ran out.
And then that guy runs out.
And then the guy says, like, the guy says,
I liked when...
Did anybody actually have a serious bet on this? And everyone just kind of looks at each other. Just
like I like when the grandpa is like, it was $190,000. And I was like, why do you just have $190,000?
that like, you also expect him to pay you back with what, like 16% interest? Like,
yeah, what did he say? What did he say the interest was? No, that was no. The 16% interest one was.
Oh, was that no? That
the
was 16, the,
was
that
the pawn shop.
Yeah, that was.
He
the,
told
that was
his grandpa,
dealer, yeah.
"I'll pay you." He told was it Gooba or Agu or whatever he called him?
It was.
He told him. he told him, I will pay you 30% interest on what you pay. I was like, why?
Oh, yeah.
Why would you do that?
For Kevin Garnett's championship ring, yeah.
Oh, my God. Dude,
You told me Friday, and now it's Monday. Okay, well, instead of 16%, I'm going to pay you 30%. What?
So I had heard a review for this movie before going in, and it was done on a podcast where the guys are not like me and you, where we heavily follow sports. They literally never pay attention to sports.
Well, hold on. And neither of us follow basketball that much. Like, I think I follow basketball more than you, but really my basketball knowledge is fairly pedestrian. Like, I do not remember the 2012 series at all.
I actually kind of remember it. I didn't really pay attention to the series, but
I know the Heat won in 2012, right?
Yes.
That was part of the Heat streak with LeBron James in Miami, because I was living in Florida at the time.
I think it was. I think that was the first one. But I thought that that Boston lost that series. But anyway, the podcast I was listening to, they don't pay attention to sports. And it was funny because, like, they didn't know, like, Kevin Garnett was a real basketball player or anything. And it was funny when
– That's awesome.
When he shows up in the movie and
he gets a credit, by the way. He gets an actual, like, first build credit.
Yeah. But he when he shows up in this movie and his security's roughing up the guys that want to get Adam Sandler. And then his security's like, get out of here, man. And he's like, dude, I literally own the store KG is in. Will you just calm down? I thought it was really funny because I thought Kevin Garnett was going to stick his head out in like a crappy sitcom, like 90s sitcom applause break moment. Where he's like, hey, is everything okay? And then you hear like clapping in the background.
I was just going to make that same noise though.
But, but no, they don't do that stupid thing in this movie. But when he gives him his championship ring, because I remember when Boston won it all, because my mom and my family is the one that likes basketball. She likes college more than anything. But I remember when Reggie Miller was with the Pacers, you know, she would follow the Pacers more. But another thing too, I went to Indiana State for a year, and I remember she liked Larry Bird from what I remember, and I know he played in Boston. So there was like there's like pretty minimal interest. Like if no interest is a zero, and as much interest as possible is 100, it's like a 2. But I do remember when Boston won, because that's a team I'd heard about, you know, when I was a kid from my mom. But I remember thinking it was really cool. And, you know, you always hear about athletes with their ring when they get their championship. The only other athlete that I've met that this reminded me of, I met Jeff Saturday last year at an autograph signing event, and he literally was taking his Super Bowl ring off and handing it to people so they could get a picture with it on their hand. But like,
dude,
Kevin Garnett,
that is a super security risk, my friend.
Dude, there literally was a bouncer as big as Jeff Saturday standing at the door, and he looked like he had better knees.
Oh my God. That sounds like the minimum security you would need for a Super Bowl ring. Oh my God.
But when Kevin Garnett takes it off, he's like, yeah, man, you can have this. I'm like, wow, you are really cavalier with something that I would probably never take off.
Oh, dude, I would be so insecure with taking that ring literally just out of my bedroom. Like,
yeah,
I would maybe wear it if I was in a broadcast booth, but outside of that, never. That would never leave my property.
Yeah.
And he's just wearing it into a jeweler's and like, oh sure, I'll trade you my championship ring for this giant shiny rock. Like,
well, wearing it around, I didn't think was ridiculous. I just thought like how cavalier he was with. He's like, yeah, man, you can have it. Like,
I need this rock. It's my good luck rock. Like, How much?
Speaking of that rock, can we just point out? I really do like that this movie's like, no, this was a blood diamond.
Oh, dude, that was another part of the story I absolutely loved. I don't know if had you seen the film Blood Diamond with Leonardo DiCaprio in it?
No, but I really like that this movie does not, like, dodge around. Like, everything about this movie is shady. It's a shady deal for the diamond, the guy, or for the opal, the jeweler trying to sell it is shady, he has a mistress, which is shady, he's dealing with sports gambling, people that are shady, he's having to get, the gangsters, muscle enforcers to come after him, which is shady. Like, everything was shady. Speaking of shady,
oh, dude, first
another
first...
spoiler, the scene in the bath where his mistress is in the bathroom with the Weeknd, I love that when he gets, or when the door gets open, she's like, no, calm down, we're only doing coke.
Oh. Hold on.
She's like, no, it's okay, it's only a really bad hardcore drug.
And he apparently was super hard during it too. Like,
yeah.
if I may be that blue without saying anything else. But no, I hold on. I don't want to glance over exactly what you were talking about just before the Weeknd, which, by the way, yes, was a pretty epic cameo in this movie.
They never resolve the thing with the Weeknd's chain. We never find out what happens to the crucifixion of Michael Jackson chain.
Oh my god, that was so funny. Right, we never did. But tying this back to what you were saying, I don't want to glance over this. The fact that literally from the very beginning, this uncut gem, this giant rock, is found in Ethiopian labor. Well, I mean, I don't presume it was
with a dude's leg almost broken off.
I don't presume slave labor, but like borderline with how clearly unprotected these guys were, all the way up to however he got transported to New York to this guy that doesn't get his life together, and it's, by the way, Eric Bogosian is his brother.
His brother-in-law.
Or brother-in-law, sorry.
Yeah.
He's a blood relative of this guy. More or less.
A blood diamond relative.
Yeah, a blood diamond relative. Copyright, hashtag brownie so, points.
So going back...
He has the family tree connection to this on top of everything else, and there's literally a Passover dinner where this is revealed during. It is not known that they're relatives. Like, the kidnapping scene that I brought up happens before... We realize that this takes place close to Passover, so we know this movie takes place in April. October. I'm sorry. This movie takes place in October. Sorry, different holiday.
Wait, isn't Passover in the spring? Because the NBA playoffs are in the spring and summer too, and Passover's before Easter.
No. I'm sorry. I'm getting my holidays mixed up. Yes, Passover is in the spring, and Sukkot is in the fall. I'm sorry. My apologies. I worked for a company that ran on the Jewish holiday calendar, and I've already forgotten that, so my apologies.
I do have a question for you about New Yorkers. Are they always yelling at each other and like that intense? Because, dude, every conversation in this movie is literally someone yelling at him because they're mad, him telling them to F off, them getting in his face, and then he's just like, nah, and he walks away. Is every conversation.
The volume is not that loud, but the tone of just like, oh, right, let's cut the crap, let's get to business. Yes, that is fairly true. Like, there's no fluff, there's no kind of small talk most of the time that I would communicate with people in New York. It would be literally just like, all right, let's cut to the business. We got to do this. We got to do this. We got to do this. Like, there was no small talk whatsoever, really. Like, outside of, like, my office where, like, we were all friends and, like, we would shoot the crap together. Like,
and then stab each other.
When it came to, like, client-to-client talk, or, like, if I ran into somebody in the street and had to talk to them for X reason or Y reason, like, it wasn't that aggressive, but okay. It was very much, like, cut to the chase. Like,
okay.
Because everybody, we're all crowded. We all have somewhere to go. If I have to talk to somebody, you better say what is on your mind or what you have to say. Otherwise, you're getting, like, a middle finger, or you're just getting ignored and, like, I'm going to shove you while I walk past you. Like,
So cutting back to the scene about the blood opal, did you notice when Adam Sandler shows him the video of the people in Ethiopia, the guy with the broken leg is shown harvesting a stone?
Oh, I did notice that, yeah.
I was like, hey, this was taken earlier that day.
Oh, yeah, and it's already on YouTube.
Yeah.
But even though he told him that it took him, what, like 17 months to get the stone to him?
Dude, the efforts they had to go to smuggle it into the country, he buys raw fish and they're just like sticking it in a bag inside the fish.
Well, I mean, to be fair, the movie did start in fall, quote unquote, 2010, and then it fast forwarded 2 years later to spring 2012.
Yeah.
So there was that actual probably 17 month gap in between the prologue and when we finally beat Adam.
Yeah. Dude, this movie had two hilarious scenes in it. I'll start with the scene that was hilarious just because of how blunt and rude it was. When his wife says, I never want to see you again. It would be absolutely great if I never had to speak to you, smell you, or hear you the rest of my life.
Oh, bluntness. Sorry, I was...
When she was in her...
Bar mitzvah dress.
Yeah, I was going to say Ramadan. I was like, that's not the right one.
not Ramadan. Wrong religion.
Yeah, no. That scene is hilarious when he's just like, I want you to take me back. And she's just like staring at him. She's like, no, I'd never want to speak to you again. You are the biggest annoyance in my life. I was laughing really hard.
Oh, dude, and she's so new that he had a mistress. There's no way she didn't know.
But to me, the like surprisingly funny scene was the closet sexting scene.
Oh, that was hilarious.
It was so childish.
I thought that she was going to get so mad at him. Like, that was not the way that scene played out in my mind. Like, I thought that was going to go very, very bad instead of, well, clearly very, very good for Adam's character.
Yeah. And then she's doing cocaine with the Weeknd in the bathroom.
Oh, my God. Dude, I have to say, them yelling at each other in front of the club was one of my favorite moments of the movie. Just them going like, oh, shut the F up. Nothing effing happened. Oh, I saw you effing him. Nothing effing happened. Get the F away from my cab. Just like the back and forth.
I love when she goes, I'll see you at work tomorrow. I just expect him to open the door and be like, you're also fired.
Oh, dude, the fact that he would just harass her on the phone just like, oh, you can come into work whenever the F you want. Oh, no, take your time. I'm going to hang up and go to work now because I have to work. Like,
because someone has to pay, but you make sure you stay pretty.
Oh, my God, I love how often that happened. Like, the fact that he never fired her, it's just...
Yeah.
God, that was really funny, too. But, I mean, with how much we've already talked about the rest of the movie, can we talk about the actual, like, end of the movie? Like, I know we touched on it a little bit.
Where he gets shot in the face?
Yes. Dude, we have to talk a little bit more about that. We already – I mean, you touched base on the parlay, but
– So what happens at the very end of the movie is Kevin Garnett buys the stone, and Adam Sandler decides that he's going to take the money Kevin Garnett paid him for the opal, and then instead of paying off his debtors, he's going to have his mistress go to the
Mohegan
apartment
Sun.
Go to the apartment next to him, get the bag of money, go to the Mohegan Sun, and place a bet on a three-way parlay. I also don't gamble, so I may be totally butchering that, but whatever.
No. That one, that's a real bet. That is a real bet. And two, the Mohegan Sun is a real place. I can vouch for it. Mohegan Sun is real.
So, quick question then. A three-way parlay, does that mean, like, okay, so is it like a rolling bet of three bets where he's like, I bet that he gets the tip off and then I take my winnings from that and I put that into this second bet. And if I get that second bet, I take the winnings from that second bet and then I put it into this third and final bet. Is that what a three-way parlay is?
I thought a parlay was just all three of these things have to happen, and I win the amount of money based on the probability of those three things in one time happening. I didn't think it was like a – I don't think it's a snowball effect.
Because he says
if it is a snowball effect, cool, but like I just thought that a parlay was like these three things are going to happen, and then they calculate the probability of that, and then that's what you won. I didn't think it was like one on top of one on top of one. I might be wrong, though.
Okay.
The most gambling I ever do is like I've played blackjack, I've played roulette, and the only reason I think
it might be a snowball effect is because he starts with a bet literally at the beginning of the game, and then the next bet is like a cumulative for the game, and then the final bet is the final outcome of the game. So that's why I thought it snowballed.
Interesting. I didn't think about it like that. I mean, maybe I've never done a parlay before. Like I do very simple betting whenever I go out and gamble, which is very, very little.
But anyway, so they send her out, and then his brother-in-law is going to try and stop the bet because they stopped the bet before. And so what they do is he's got a two-door like buzz-in system, and he locks him in between the two doors.
Oh, that's very common in New York, by the way, like having that extra security.
And then he locks him in there so they can't stop the bet, and then they watch the game. And I remember as soon as he locked him in there and they showed that the one guy that was the muscle had a gun, I was like, oh, he's for sure going to die. Because that muscle guy earlier in the movie, it's established. It's almost like he's in charge, which is weird. He's not listening to his boss very well.
Well, it's not the fact that he's in charge. It's that he is most likely to commit.
He just seems like he is. Like, he comes across like he does not care. Like, he's like muscle for hire that won't listen to his boss.
He is the most likely to commit mutiny because he thinks he knows better than his employer.
Yeah. So Adam Sandler, Adam Sandler's mistress gets there, places the bet. While she's waiting to find out, one of the gangsters, muscle guys, winds up where she's at because Adam Sandler told him the plan, and so they're like, oh well, they sent the guy there. His mistress sees him. She ducks out, has to hide out. They find out that they won the game, and they got like, what was it, $1.8 million on this one bet.
Oh, yeah, it was over $1 million. Yeah, it was like 1.7 or 8, something like that.
Yeah. So they're all rejoicing. Adam Sandler buzzes them out. His brother-in-law's like, holy crap, like, he's going to pay us all this money. And then the muscle guy just walks up and shoots Adam Sandler in the face.
Literally point blank, a millimeter away from his face. Boom! And just drops him. And then he drops
Adam
his
Sandler
brother,
falls
too.
Over. Well, I really think he was not going to kill the brother-in-law until the brother-in-law tried to run away, and then it's like, all right, this guy's panicking, and he's not staying calm, and he's a loose end, so that's why he killed him.
I mean, regardless of, like, sure, but the fact that he just scorched the earth, just like, oh, well, I don't care that he's my boss, he's freaking out, just like... God, that was so... Hold on. I texted you after the movie. The first thing I texted you after the movie, because I saw your text that said, I give this movie sprinkles, or whatever you said.
My text was what I said to the guy next to me.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's right. My first text to you after I got out of this movie was... and I quote, I literally screamed when Adam Sandler got shot in the face. And I meant that. Right when that happened, like, he opened the door and he's just like, hey, what's up? Boom! And it just happened that instantaneously. And I felt bad for the woman next to me because I usually don't get audible in a movie. I'd literally, like, I'm in a recliner seat, and my feet just kicked up, like my knees went into my chest, and I literally yelled, "Ah!" And the woman next to me jumped too, but like I feel like she jumped because of the movie, but if she jumped because of me, sorry, I did yell kind of loud.
But yeah, I actually figured he was gonna get shot.
Oh, dude, it still scared the crap out of me. Like, I had that general unease throughout the film, just like, oh my god, is he actually going to get out of this?
That's something we haven't even really touched on, that the movie itself is filmed in a way that makes you uncomfortable.
Well, like, the movie is shot on film. I did see that. This movie is shot on film. Well, it is in very low lighting with a lot of neon compliments.
That it's film. It's the lighting. It's the angles. It's the zooms. It's the lenses. It's very... Honestly, it's like when you
it's the culmination
you
of
see
the,
someone in a movie, you see someone in a movie do cocaine or meth. This is how I imagine like they perceive what's happening in the world.
It's the culmination of every single decision that they made. Like the fact that this movie has this general how should I break this down? The fact that this movie is generally in like low lighting that's accented with neon, the fact that it's shot on film, so there's this overall kind of softness to it that you don't get with a digital film, the fact that like so much of the film is all in close-ups and every line is delivered very deliberately and intently and with this there's always like this underlying kind of deceptiveness with especially Adam Sandler, just like you can tell the entire movie he's just trying to snake around into like his own means. Like he knows that he's in trouble, but he can ignore the fact that like it could affect other people just because he's so addicted to the thrill of just the thrill, whether he's ahead or he's behind. Like if he's behind, like fight or flight, he's gonna fight. But even when he's ahead, like you've said, he just is addicted to that thrill. Like, and the film captures in its tone that mentality of him so well. Like, when he's down, we're down with him. When he's high and just like, all right, let's just keep riding it, go on black again, just like it just the Safdie brothers understand this character so well that they created and emulate his personality into the bleakness of the tone of this movie so well. I can't think of a better way to describe it than that. Just like, just kudos to them. I think what you were asking was what award would best be suited in the Oscars for the overall tone of this film. It's either both art direction and editing, if not one or the other, but I think it's a combination of the art direction and the editing that you're talking about, which, by the way, I think this movie does deserve a best editing Oscar. I love the editing
of
this movie.
It's one of those ones where I'm not entirely sure if it's best picture, but it does deserve best, like, the tone and the setting and just the feel that this movie sets up. It deserves to be recognized as the best of the year.
Oh,
because as anxious as Adam Sandler's character has to be in the movie of constantly like this ridiculously intricate plan can all fall apart at a millisecond. And he's got to constantly be worried about that. This movie makes you feel that.
I would hope that this movie ends up getting nominated for, well, it's more than likely going to be get nominated for Best Actor, Adam Sandler, obviously, which, again, would be well-deserved. He's phenomenal in it. Best Editing. I really hope this gets nominated for Best Editing.
Soundtrack's pretty good.
Oh, well, there's not a soundtrack Oscar, unfortunately.
Or
but,
the score.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying, Best Score. I really hope this gets nominated for Best Score, even though it's going to lose to Joker, because Joker is the best score of the year. I don't know if it would be nominated for best art direction necessarily, but I agree with you. I think the art direction of this film is great. And then my real low key dark horse, I hope she gets it, even though she's probably not. Like I said, Idina Menzel, just she hit a home run with this movie. I really hope she gets an Oscar nomination. Even though she's going against apparently literally the entire ensemble of Bombshell and J-Lo, like...
Judi Dench's un-CGI'd hand.
Yeah.
Because we all know the CGI was the problem with Cats.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Listen to our review where Dan and I don't mention it for 30 minutes.
Oh, yeah. Literally, our review would 180 if they just fix that CGI.
Literally, when that news story broke, I texted Dan, and I was like, dude, apparently they're re-releasing Cats with updated CGI. Dan's response is, we didn't even mention it for half of the review. That's not the problem.
Oh, yeah, you said it. The CGI is far from the only problem with that movie.
Dude, we haven't figured out who we'd cast Nicolas Cage to be in this movie.
I know we talk about this every week, but I don't want Nick Cage to replace anybody in this movie.
I would have him be Mike Francesa.
As who?
I would have him be Mike Francesa. The guy that Adam Sandler is making his bets with at that restaurant.
Oh, that little cameo. Okay. That's not a bad idea.
Yeah. That's who I'd have Nicolas Cage be, just because he's like, that's literally the dumbest bet I've ever heard.
I disagree. Are you having a good time? Yeah. Yes, I am. Dude, every time that he's just like... There's those moments in the movie where it's just a straight shot on his face, and he's just like, that's how I effing win. This is how I effing win. Like, oh my god. I can see why Adam Sandler's gotten so much Oscar buzz for this movie. Like, I haven't loved a performance from Adam Sandler like this in such a long time. It is so refreshing that we get to close out 2019 with arguably, like, the... Okay, I don't want to be that controversial because... comedy and drama is apples and oranges, but this is up there as one of my favorite movies I've ever seen with Adam Sandler in. I'm sorry. Comedy Adam Sandler only goes with me so far, but...
Skip it.
It's time for Hanukkah.
Oh my god, what if Adam Sandler did this entire movie as Opera Man?
I was thinking just the guy from Mr. D's just like, that's Hawaiian Punch. Yeah, I got my foot went black from frostbite. Go ahead and whack it. Take that fire poker over there. Whack!
Oh, you're sick! You're sick! You're horrible! I can't even feel it.
Sorry. Okay, anyway.
I'm running out of stuff to say about it. It's amazing. Go see it. Also, be prepared to have a panic attack for 4 hours.
Oh,
it's over. It's a two-hour movie. I've been out of it since 9:30. It's now 11 o'clock at night. I'm still anxious.
It is an anxiety roller coaster led by a truly terrific Oscar-worthy performance from Adam Sandler. And the rest of the ensemble around him is fantastic, too. The Safdie brothers did it again. They've made a movie I think honestly is better than Good Times, if you've seen Good Time. But I just couldn't have asked for a better film to close out the year. We are going to take a very brief break, and then we are going to talk about the movie that Nick and I both watched on Christmas Day, the appropriately titled A Christmas Story. We'll be right back. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. We have just landed the time machine here in 1983, and we are going to be talking about the quintessential Christmas film of all time, A Christmas Story. It comes to us courtesy of director Bob Clark, who you might know from numerous films in his resume. I don't have his resume up in front of me. but it comes to us courtesy of Bob Clark, along with Gene Shepard, who this film is based upon his book, which honestly is one of the best book titles I've ever heard. It's called In God We Trust, All Others Pay Cash. I get why they didn't keep that title, but I just love that title. The film was also written by Lee Brown and Bob Clark, who helped Gene adapt the movie. And Gene, coincidentally, is also the actual voiceover for Adult Ralph. Did you know that?
What character is he?
He's literally the narrator.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, the guy that wrote the book this is based on is actually the narrator of the movie, which I... I guess to segue this into, well, actually, no, I want to say, real quick, I just got his list up here. You just got to know the first four films that he's known for, according to IMDb, Bob Clark. He is known for Baby Geniuses, the original Black Christmas, and... just take a guess what his other film is besides Christmas Story.
Bridge Over the River Kwai? With how random his movie selection is?
No, not a bad guess. It's literally the sex comedy Porky's. Which, again, or not again, according to the trivia... If he didn't make Porky's, he wouldn't have been allowed to make this movie because Porky's was such a big hit. Which, by the way, do you want to do Porky's for the Time Machine?
I've heard very little about it. I know very little about Porky's, so sure.
All right. Well, not to get too far off of a Christmas movie, not a sex comedy. this was directed by Bob Clark and written by Gene Shepard. The main star of this film, Ralph himself, he is played by Peter Billingsley, along with other performances from Darren McGavin, Scott Schwartz, and Melinda Dillon. Sorry, I just read the top names on the IMDb billing. But anyway... the book that this was based on in my reading, or in my trivia reading, was from a collection of short stories that that the writer actually wrote for, guess what, Playboy magazine during his time as a writer there.
I was going to say Hanukkah.
No. He wrote a lot of these short stories that ended up becoming the basis of this movie, Gene Shepard, while he was working for Playboy magazine, that he then turned into this book, In God We Trust and All Others Pay Credit. So that kind of makes sense for this movie, because in watching this again, I forgot this movie kind of doesn't have a plot, really. I forgot this movie was really just a kind of slice-of-life movie, kind of like Boyhood and many other movies like Dazed and Confused, where it's not...
It's the Big Lebowski of Christmas.
Oh, yeah, Big Lebowski, too. There's a lot of movies out there where it's just... It's not really about the story. Like, it doesn't really have a point A to point B to point C. It is just about this moment in time where the film is carried based on... how well-constructed these characters are, their personalities, and just these random series of vignettes and situations that intersect each other every now and then, but just don't really have that big of an overall point. Like, I mean, you could argue that getting the Red Ryder rifle is, like, the biggest overall goal that Ralphie has in the movie, but it's not just... him wanting the rifle. It's all these random things he runs into. Like, we learn a little bit about his dad. His brother cries a lot. He gets bullied a lot.
His brother, his brother is a European police siren.
Yes, he is. All he does... I texted you while I was watching this movie was like, oh, good Lord, his brother literally just cries this entire movie. Like,
I can't get up!
Okay, hold on. Before I finish my hot take, probably the hardest I laughed in this movie was when his mom was wrapping the scarf around his mouth, and he's just going, and then she takes it off, and he's just like, I can't move! And then she's like, oh,
I can't put my arms down! And then she goes, you can put your arms down at school, and she wraps his head back up.
Oh my god, that was arguably the hardest I laughed in the movie, outside of the very, very end, with the kind of borderline racist moment in the movie. But I love the
line delivery by the dad. Alright, everybody go upstairs, get dressed. We're going out to eat.
Yeah.
It sounds so elegant and refined in that line. It's really strange.
Oh my god, I love the dad in this movie. He just, oh my god, we'll break down certain things here in a minute, but I'll just finish my hot take. It's been a while since I've seen this movie all the way through. I'm not one of those guys that, like, this was a traditional movie, kind of like Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
I am very much that.
Yeah, I mean, not to call you out specifically, but, like, I just... Planes, Trains, and Automobiles was not a traditional movie at my house. Christmas Story was not a traditional movie at my house. I know I've seen this at least once, but it's been years since I actually sat down and watched this all the way through, especially with a critical eye, if I ever watched this movie with a critical eye before. So, watching it now, like we've talked about with some other Time Machine films, I get exactly where it's coming from in terms of I get why this is heralded as such a classic as it is. It is a very, very good movie. It is very, very funny. The acting is great. I love slice of life movies that are done very well that, like, they feel aimless when you think about it, but at the same time, like, that's just kind of the point. Like, it's just, like, that's life. It's just kind of aimless. It's all these little moments that maybe in the moment you don't treasure as much as you do down the line. It's just the cumulative the sum of its parts that just, oh wow, that really is just kind of what it is going through Thanksgiving or Christmas or just growing up again, like Boyhood. Like, I honestly thought a lot about Boyhood during this movie, even though it clearly doesn't span the 12 years that Boyhood did, but it's carried so well by all these performances that just really understand their characters so well. Gene Shepard's narration is one of the best narrations I've ever heard in a movie. It's literally the opposite of Harrison Ford's in Blade Runner, which is one of the worst narrations in cinema history.
There's so much care put into this one.
Oh, yeah. It just, you could feel that this came from a personal place from the way that Gene just delivered every single one of his lines. Like, when Ralphie is, like, looking through the window right in the very beginning of the movie, and, like, he's just kind of just, like, like, just looking at the, whatever the decorations were in the window, and, but Gene is just describing the way that he felt in that moment, like, presumably him as a kid, and just Peter is just like just being a kid, and they compliment each other so well.
The reason I love this movie is because it captures the joy and wonderment of Christmas at that age, you know, like 9-10 years old, while simultaneously being incredibly pessimistic about life and Christmas and everything. And that's why I really love it. I don't want to say it's a realistic look at Christmas, but it's such a relatable representation of it to me.
Well, I want to argue that that is kind of realistic. Like, I mean, given the age that we're at now,
it might be realistic. To other people, you know, maybe Christmas really is this wondrous and joyous, and maybe they don't get stressed out somehow. Maybe that, you know, Christmas season is just a breeze for them, and it's just absolutely lovely and enjoyable. I love Christmas. I personally don't find it like that. I do find it to be stressful. Of all right, well, now I got to find the time, and I got to make sure that I get everyone what they want. But I want to make sure that, you know, I can do that. But also, you got to make sure you have enough money for this and that. And it's it's great, but at the same time, it's hectic and chaotic and stressful. But I personally love Christmas. As dark as I seem to people, maybe that might be a surprise, but I this is my favorite Christmas movie of all time. And I also love Christmas. Yes, Beth, it's great. But
I'm surprised you heard her. That was such a weak meow from her.
It sounded like she like grabbed the microphone and put it in front of her mouth. It's gonna really show up in the audio probably. But yeah, I really like this movie for how pessimistic it kind of views life. Like the scene where Ralphie snaps and just borderline commits manslaughter.
Oh, when he's Scott just Marcus. Wailing on the bully? Yeah.
Yeah. The your mother, ooh scene. I love when he gets home, too, when she's like, well, Ralphie had a fight. And Dad's like, what kind of fight? Oh, you know, boys and how they are. Did you see that thing about this in the paper? Like, dude, it's the 50s. The kid just beats the snot out of him. And they're like, we don't need to look into it. The kid was bullying him. He finally snapped. The kid will leave him alone forever.
Right. I was talking to because I saw this before. I saw a lot of relatives for Christmas. Listeners, we are recording this just after Christmas.
I was talking to a lot of my relatives at Christmas, and I was like, "Hey, did you ever beat the snot out of someone and get rewarded with a weapon?"
No. I was talking about this with some relatives I was hanging out with at Christmas, and I realized that specifically my dad, like, this movie could have been my dad's childhood. Like, he,
yeah.
I mean, my dad, when he would have been Ralph's age, which coincidentally was his dad's name, my grandfather's.
Yeah.
He was a little older than Ralph. Like, my dad would have grew up in the 60s instead of the 50s. But
yeah.
At the same time, I forgot this movie took place in northern Indiana, which is where my dad grew up. All Chicago fan, which, not the Sox. My dad's a Cubs fan and a Bears fan. But,
I love
that
this movie makes fun of the Bears, too, by the way. Monsters of the Midway. More like chipmunks.
Right. I just...
That's how I viewed them my entire life, including before I liked football.
Well, okay. I know you're biased against Chicago. I'm just saying that, like, I just personally just – all I could think about was just like, oh, my God. If my dad was born a little bit earlier, this would have been my dad. Like, not saying my grandfather would have been, like, as odd as this character was, but, like – I don't know. That kind of just took me out of it from, like, the critical hat I kind of wear when I watch movies. And I was just like, oh, my God. This had to have been, like, what my dad was like growing up. Like, in lieu of a little brother, it would have been a sister. But
another thing that might take you out of the critical hat. Did you ever have a Christmas, like, something you wanted for Christmas that was like Ralphie and the BB gun?
Oh, surely I did. Well, I mean, this year, to a certain extent, yes.
Well, I mean, when you were a kid, when, you know, when Christmas was, like, 1,000 times more magical than it is now.
I'm sure I did. I mean, if you have a specific example, I don't have one offhand.
I can think of two.
Oh, geez, one, I'm sorry.
Well, no. One was it's, like, maybe 2004. It was when the GameCube, when Nintendo dropped it down to like $99 for a GameCube. I really, really wanted one because I had a PlayStation 1. And at that point, like, PlayStation 2 was ending its life cycle and I had a PlayStation 1.
Okay.
But probably the funnier one was, do you remember how the Republic, the newspaper where me and you are from, do you remember how they used to, and I think they still do, they would publish letters to Santa from kids?
No. I mean, given I didn't read the Republic that much, but no. What, they actually did that?
By the way, they do that, and a letter of mine to Santa got put in the paper.
Oh, no kidding. What did you what did you ask
and,
for?
And so what happened was is I wrote a letter to Santa, and that year I don't remember how old I was. I used to be really into Legos. Like, I had a Lego city in my bedroom when I was in elementary school. And when I wrote this letter to Santa, apparently, when I made my Christmas list, Lego had just put out, like, this soccer stadium where you could play soccer with Lego people. Like, you could fling them back and they would kick soccer balls and stuff like that. Kind of like an evolution of foosball. And so I really wanted one, but I didn't tell anybody. Like, I told nobody. And then I wrote in my letter to Santa, "Dear Santa, for Christmas I would really like the Lego soccer stadium. I didn't tell anybody I wanted it, so if you give it to me, I know you're real." That got published. In the paper, and my mom saw it and then, like, had to scramble to find it so that I would continue to believe in Santa.
Oh my god, you just added as a kid. That much more you just added that much more stress to your mom during the holiday.
yeah as like a 9 or 10 year old kid.
Oh my god, that is
I gave
so
my
funny.
Mom a panic attack when she read the paper that day. She's like, "Oh my god!" I don't know why she sounds like a. My impression sounds British, but.
Let's just peruse the paper, see what's going on in the local news. Oh, there's some kids that want stuff from Santa. Oh, let's see. Wait, Nick. Oh dear God! Like.
cut to Randy Marsh. No, my God.
That is hilarious. But, yeah. I didn't know that happened. That is really funny.
The first time that got told to me, I didn't remember it at all. The first time it was told to me. And
who
then,
did you give that letter to get it in the paper?
I vaguely remember doing it in class.
Okay.
But so, I don't remember the "this is a test to see if Santa's real" thing at all.
Okay. Interesting. Nothing to add. I mean, I'm not surprised that, like,
any kids that are listening to this podcast that, sorry, I just ruined the Santa thing for you, but if there's something you want to make sure you get for Christmas and your parents still believe in Santa, the key is don't tell them. Write a letter to Santa and have it get published in the paper and make it a test to see if Santa exists, because then you'll get it.
Right. I was about to... Well, this joke would be funnier if we actually saw a bombshell, but I just... You made me think of one of the lead characters of Bombshell... is Macon Kelly, and you just made me think of when Macon Kelly.
Oh God, I know exactly what you're about to talk about.
Oh yeah, it wasn't. It's not Macon Kelly in Bombshell. Presumably, I don't think this is actually in the movie. But when Macon Kelly was actually on air and was just like, "Well, you know, just Santa, he's just white." Like.
But yeah, so I've been Ralphie.
Yeah,
I think we've all been Ralph, and the wonderment of that was awesome.
when you actually got the GameCube, the disc shot out of the machine and hit you in the eye.
No, I saw it and I was like, it's got a handle on it, like it's a lunchbox for some reason.
While you're waiting to get your GameCube, your dad got one of those sexy lingerie fishnet lamps.
When we were watching it this week, I watched it on the 24-hour marathon on TBS, and I was watching it with Kelsey, my sister, my brother-in-law, and my mom and dad, and my brother-in-law and I have come to an agreement that we want to get full size leg lamps and leave them up year round in like our main window in our living room.
Oh my god! And get completely obsessive with it, just like no, yeah. You gotta scoot it over just a little bit to the left. Okay, back to the right. No, perfect. Like,
dude, I say you used up all the glue on purpose year round.
Do you also go down to the basement and just go,
I'm convinced this movie's where Joe Pesci got the inspiration for his nonsensical swearing in Home Alone. This has to be where he got it.
That's not a bad theory. That's pretty funny. I didn't think about that.
Back to the leg lamp thing. When they're like, at night, we thought we could hear the old man buried it behind the garage. And we thought that we heard the sound of taps being played.
Oh. Yeah.
So, do you remember my apartment in Columbus?
Oh, yeah. No, we saw a great football game in that apartment. Yeah.
Yeah. The Aaron Rodgers Hail Mary against Detroit. I literally jumped over my coffee table in my living room. That play made me so excited.
Dude, we went out and went to a gas station to get some snacks at halftime, and I remember you were so mad.
I was just so mad, and I remember saying, I'm thinking about turning off this stupid game.
Yeah, we thought about watching something else, and I'm just like, no, let's just finish watching the game. Honestly,
I think what you said to me was, dude, we don't get to see each other. Let's just watch football, even though I know you're pissed, is what you said to me.
Maybe that was it. I don't remember the exact. I wouldn't be surprised if I said that. But lo and behold, it turns out, literally with 0 seconds left on the clock, the final play of the game, you win, and you're personality 180s, and I just sigh, and I'm just like, well, of course you guys won the game, because you always beat the Lions. Like,
because Matt Stafford was playing. So that apartment, I didn't have a lot of Christmas decorations when I lived there, because I would go up to Lafayette at the end of the semester. The first year I lived there, I had like a real tiny Christmas tree and then some Christmas lights. The second year, when it went to Christmas, I graduated and I had to move out of my apartment. So I was like, I'm not going to put up a bunch of Christmas decorations. So my second year, I only had one Christmas decoration, and it was a teeny tiny Christmas tree ornament, and it was the leg lamp.
Oh, for real?
And it just sat on my table that was by my by the door of my apartment.
Oh, that's funny. I've had so little connection to this movie, like, thinking about it. Like, I mean, sorry guys, there's not really that much to talk about critically when it comes to like the movie itself. Like,
Dan has failed you.
Well, no, I mean, I can, but like, I'm just thinking about like, you have such a personal connection to this movie that I don't. Like, yeah, I honestly feel kind of weird just like wanting to talk about it more critically, just because like I don't have that much bad to say about it. And
So what is this movie rated?
Oh, sprinkles. This movie's great.
No. Like G, PG, PG-13. What's this rated?
It's PG. And I read in the trivia specifically that it was PG. The dad specifically, I saw in the trivia that the dad specifically, like, when he went down to the basement to work on the furnace, he just said a bunch of gibberish because he knew if he actually swore the way that he wanted to ad-lib, the movie wouldn't get a PG rating.
Funny. But I remember seeing this when I was five or six.
Oh my god.
So I grew up watching this movie every Christmas.
Yeah, that's literally not me. This was this was honestly like the first time that I watched this movie with any sense of like any kind of like a critical eye whatsoever.
We actually did not even, my family did not own a copy of this movie until maybe like 4 years ago. 4 or 5 years ago.
Was it on Blu-ray or DVD?
We got it on DVD, but I'm talking, dude, like literally I just watched it every year on the TBS marathon.
Right, because they do that every single year, yeah.
Yeah. But this movie to me, like, so I texted you a picture, but my brother-in-law, I think it was for my birthday a couple years ago, as a joke, bought me the bunny suit.
Right, yes, the infamous bunny suit.
And for people listening to this, if you saw our post saying, hey, the show's up, that's the picture is of me standing next to the TV while Ralphie wears the bunny suit, is me wearing the bunny suit.
And his brother, and his brother just laughing his head off.
yeah. So, he bought it for me, and I remember, like, I put it on, and I was like, joke's on you, this is incredibly comfortable and warm. But, dude, like I said, I grew up watching this movie. This is, I would say, my personal Rocky Horror Picture Show. Every time I watch it, when I watch it with my family, we just shout quotes of the movie at it.
Are you saying that I watch Rocky Horror Picture Show with my family? Because I will never watch that movie with my family.
if you put on a bunny suit and watch it with your family, you're basically me.
I just walk out in like some lingerie with fishnets, and I'm just like, hello family, we're gonna watch Rocky Horror Picture Show, like,
and then your mom just hits you with a rolling pin upside the head.
No, my mom I can't even finish the joke. You saying Rocky Horror Picture Show, because that movie means that movie means about as much to me as this movie means to you. I just sorry. That's not to get terrifying. Completely sidetracked. Okay, well, we're gonna watch it for the time machine, just a heads up. It is gonna happen.
I've actually never seen it, but back to this movie. Growing up, like I said, I've said like you used up all the glue on purpose on a daily basis. Anytime anyone in my house gets a gift, especially me and my dad, we open it, and if it's like in a box, like not like a t-shirt, but like say like something that got mailed and we just left it in a box and you get the wrapping paper off and just see the cardboard box, we just look up and go, a can of Simon Eyes, every time.
Oh, for I thought you were gonna say Fragile.
No, we say that about literally everything else, like whenever we get a package in the mail. I do, okay. Like I said before, I collect sports memorabilia, so like I'll get like a photo in the mail and it says fragile photo, do not bend. And I'm like, Fragile photo, do not bend.
That made me laugh. That also made me laugh really hard because I just went to you immediately, because you get more like delicate, you collect more delicate things than I do, and I just instantly thought, oh, I bet that makes Nick laugh a lot. Just
yeah.
Fragile, like
yeah. God, I think it's interesting in this movie that the dad is really the only person that went on to do much after this movie. Like I know Ralph ended up in Elf, and he was the guy in Spider-Man Far From Home. And in Iron Man 1 that gets yelled at by Obadiah Stane, or Stane, or however you pronounce his name.
Wait, who was he? Who was he in Far From Home?
In Far From Home, he's the scientist that Obadiah Stane is yelling at and goes, Tony Stark was able to build this in a cave in that flashback. And then he's working with Mysterio. He was apparently in Iron Man. He was in Iron Man 1 and in Spider-Man Far From Home.
Oh my god. Okay, hold on. I pulled him up. Guess what he has been credited as a producer on?
Fargo.
No, he was literally a producer on, an executive producer on Iron Man. Not just a producer, he was an executive producer.
Wow.
He also, he directed a Vince Vaughn film. Guess what Vince Vaughn film he directed?
Wedding Crashers.
No, not Fred a bad Claus. Guess.
Fred Claus.
No, not a bad, no, not that one.
The Breakup.
Close. Couples Retreat.
Oh, weird.
I haven't personally seen that movie, but yeah, no, I'm looking at his acting resume. Yeah, I didn't notice that he was in Far From Home or Iron Man, to which he is credited.
Thank you, random post on Facebook I saw that pointed that out to me a couple months ago.
To which he's literally credited as the same character, William Ginter Rivera, or Riva, yeah. Whatever.
Riviera.
I mean, I don't think it's pronounced, well, maybe it's pronounced that, but whatever. Oh, his character in Elf, do you remember his character in Elf?
Yeah, but I don't remember the name.
He's credited as playing Ming Ming in Elf.
I'm just not gonna make a joke.
Right. Do you want to segue into your thoughts on the ending? Because I kind of want to talk about the ending a little bit, maybe,
before
if you want to.
Before we get to the ending, before we get to, who would you cast Nicolas Cage to be?
Oh my god. Oh, there's so many characters that Nicolas Cage would be in this movie. I mean, if you have one, go ahead and say it and let me think about it.
I have two. One of them is just because I want to see Nicolas Cage deliver this line. The elf on the Santa slide that's like shaking his head. He's like, hurry up, kid, the store is closing. And his head's like bouncing up and down.
Hurry up, kid, the store is closing.
Hurry up, kid, the store is closing.
That honestly kind of sounded like William Shatner, kind of. Hurry up. Hurry up, kid. The store is closing.
Hurry up, kid. The store is closing. But by the way, I want to point out, I like the camera technique in that scene where they make it a fisheye lens and they make it a handheld thing.
And in his point of view, yeah.
And they're clearly just passing a camera around. It makes it a lot more disorienting.
What about Nick Cage's Santa? Just Nick Cage going into the camera just going, ho, ho.
No, I'd make the one, like, the main character I would make him is his teacher.
Oh, what's her name? Miss Sally?
I don't remember.
Oh, hold on. I'll pull it up. But,
I'm terrible
keep
with names. I don't remember.
Yeah. But anyway, finish your thoughts on that.
When his teacher starts writing, like, A++, you notice she starts writing on the wall in chalk?
Break that down for me. I'm not remembering that moment specifically.
So when she starts going, A, like it's when she's grading papers in his fantasy, and she's like, A, plus, 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 the kids pick him up and start carrying him around the room, and there's a shot where they cut, and she's not on the board anymore, and she's just walking around the room writing plus marks on the wall. In chalk.
Oh, I didn't notice. I didn't notice that. I was just so. Yeah. I was so enamored with everyone just carrying him, just going, Ralph, Ralph, Ralph. Like.
Yeah.
But, by the way, I just want to throw out there that was one of my favorite moments in the film too. That, like I was alluding to, with how it emulated like
fantasies,
what,
man.
Dude, every time it broke into Ralph thinking about like how should play out, like the way that like he just got the gun or he aced that essay, like every time it broke into his fantasies, They were so perfect as to how a child would imagine just everything turning up Milhouse. Like,
oh, God.
They were so emotionally perfect in tone, and, like, it just made me think of, like, so many moments when I was a kid thinking about, like, oh, this is going to go perfectly and exactly the way that I want it to go. Like,
Dan was sitting there and he was like, my teacher's in the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah. That's something in the trivia, actually, that, like, I noticed that there's some nitpicky things where, like, certain things were, like, the calendar on the kitchen wall, the dates didn't match up to 1940, they matched up to 1939, and there was this song playing in the background that came out in 1943, and, like, a lot of this... I mean, again, it's a lot of nitpicky things, but, like, it's a lot of
when you do a period piece, you're going to get small details wrong.
Yeah, and another thing I wanted to point out, since we're talking about trivia, was that this film was actually shot in Cleveland, Ohio, even though it takes place in a small northern town in Indiana, quote-unquote. But apparently, like, in the 80s, Cleveland, Ohio just welcomed this movie with open arms, and, like, a lot of the cars that were donated for the very first shot in the movie were just from a bunch of just people that knew the movie was filming there, and they just donated their cars, and it was I thought that was fascinating in itself, on top of the fact that just, like, again, not knowing much of the history of this movie before this viewing, I had a feeling that this had to come from a personal place, but I didn't realize really that, again, Gene Shepard wrote a bunch of stories that were about his life and turned them into this book, and just volunteered himself to be the narrator of this movie. I just can't get over the fact that that added this personal layer of just... this personal layer that you just don't get from other movies like this. And I guess I've seen slice of life movies, but it's hard to ignore the fact that, like, this came from such a real place. It added something that you just kind of can't get from any other movie that just kind of made this up or anything like that. I don't know. It just kind of touched me a little bit that there's a kernel of truth in all these little vignettes, whether it's the bully or them going out to get Chinese food, or just watching his dad just get mad at random things, or infatuated with the lamp, or even the subtle things of, like, with his mom.
Speaking of the Chinese food scene, since you don't have a huge history with the movie, my dad pointed this out to me a couple of years ago, and every time I watch it now, I'm really distracted by it. In the Chinese food scene, do you see what he does with the goose's head after cutting it off?
No, I do have one bit of trivia about the goose head, but no, what are you going to say?
So, after, when he's like, oh, it's smiling at me, he's like, oh, pulls out a meat cleaver and hacks off the thing's head.
Right.
They're all, like, freaking out and laughing and stuff like that. The guy then proceeds to put it in his shirt pocket.
I did not notice that because I was just distracted from the mom screaming.
Yep, he puts the severed duck head in his shirt pocket like it's a pin.
Oh my God, I did. No, definitely did notice that. This ties into the trivia that I read. The last bit of trivia that I have that's, I mean, worth talking about
was... I heard that whole scene was ad-lib.
Oh, it was. Apparently, everybody had a version of the script where the duck would come out with a head except for the mom. So the mom was the only one that was caught offhand. The fact that the duck came out completely cooked with head intact. So her scream was real. And then the guy just going, oh, you don't like the duck head? I'll take care of that. And cut it off. That scream was real. Kind of like the alien chestburster scene where all the women on the ship.
That is probably the only comparison this movie will ever have with Alien, by the way.
Oh, right.
greatest unscripted improvised movie scenes of all time. The duck followed by chest burster scene.
Right. By the way, I mentioned it at the start, but at the very start of the scene where everybody's just saying they're singing the song in the way that they do, not gonna lie, the SJW in me was just like, oh my god, this movie actually went there. But again, yes, it's from 1983. That's the point of the time machine. But then when the chef comes out and he's just like, no, it's not.
It's fa la 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 la, not ra 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 ra.
Yeah, I like that this movie, even back then, just consciously was just like, no, guys, you can't have this accent. It's like, I mean, I don't know. I love the little nuance of that. Just like, no, you can't say it like that. You have to say it like this. And then they still screwed up anyway. Like, I just...
Yeah.
I mean, sorry not sorry, that was a really, really funny joke. I thought that was really funny.
Yes. Very funny.
Okay, I'm glad we're in agreement on that. That, like, it was borderline racist, but then it ended up being really
funny.
Yeah, borderline racist, but then ended up being really, really funny. I guess I don't know, what was the funniest... Or what's your favorite, I guess, kind of vignette that you followed? Because there's so many little, just various B stories that all...
Do you mean strictly a fantasy of his, or just like, kind of like small story that takes place for a while?
Yeah, no, this whole movie is based upon a series of short stories, and in the film, it takes all these short stories and just kind of blenders them together. What was your favorite story that you ended up following, like whether it was like the bullies or the dad or him getting the rifle? Like, what was your favorite story that you wanted to follow throughout all the stories?
I would say it was probably the story with the bullies. Just because it's one of those things where, like, we've seen, like, we got Joker this year. So someone supercut that trailer to be about this movie.
Dude, Joker, if there was one thing that Joker was missing, it was more Benny Hill fast-forward intercuts.
What that scene needed where he was beating up his bully, he goes, "You get what you effing deserve!" Boof, 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 boof.
All that scene was missing was him just going exactly like Joker said, "Well, the joke's on you. You get what you deserve," and he just shoots him in the face. Like,
yeah. But I like it because after that happens, the bullies leave him alone. Like, when you really think about it, yeah, they're picking on him. Yeah, they're bullies. And like other movies, you see the bullies, like, even after they get their comeuppance, are still there. Not in this one, where he beats him up, and then it's almost like the bully died. I mean, I know he didn't, because he gets up and he wipes his face, but, you know, maybe
I guess in, like, a video game sense, yeah.
But, yeah, he has, I just like that, you know, he's just, like, the definition of pure evil, and then Ralphie one day doesn't get the grade he thought he'd get on his paper. He thinks it ruins his chances for the Christmas present he wants. And then the bully, for no reason, hits him with a snowball. And then, you know, he rains blows down upon him. And I love right. I love that the henchman kid is just like, "Hey, get off him." And Ralphie just, like, shoves him off. And he's like, "I'm telling my dad." It's like, "Yeah, kid, go get your dad. I'll beat him up, too." Did you hear what Ralphie did? No, he beat up Mr. Henderson.
I think my favorite B story, honestly, was following the dad. For some reason, I was just so so interested in just like that workaday dad that like he kind of carries his home work with him.
They never say what he does for work, do they?
No, but like I just love that like he would come home and he would be that stern father figure, and then like him just taking out so much anger on the furnace, and then like the one little victory he has in life,
He's a stern father figure, but at the same time, you do see he loves his family and his kids.
Well, yeah, like, he does, but, like, at the same time, like, outside of, like, yes, he's got a family, he's got a house and all that, the one little victory he has in life is winning this contest where the prize is just this woman's leg with fishnets on it, and he's so friggin' proud of it.
It could have been a bowling alley.
I could have, but... But he's so proud of this leg, this one thing in his life. He's so proud of this leg. It's just, I don't know, part of me can empathize with that so much that just, like, in your life, yes, you have all this around you and you're raising a family. You just want one minuscule random thing that you could be so proud of. And then it just is shattered, and you used all the glue, like, while you're trying to save it, or salvage it, like...
You used up all the glue on purpose. I love when he puts the lampshade on, and he, like, sets it on there real lightly, and it starts to go, and then he, like, grabs the lampshade, like, pile drives the lamp down.
Oh, dude, I've had that moment before in my life, too, where it's just, like, the one little thing, and you can tell it's just not gonna work, and you're just like, well, screw it, and you just...
Who you're talking to, right? I've had that happen a billion times working on my car or guitars or literally any other thing I've ever done.
Oh no,
my TV stand that was in my bedroom, I remember the Christmas I got it, I actually spent 2 hours yelling at it.
Oh, your TV?
I was like, no, my TV stand. I was like, why don't you fit in slot A? It says slot A. Go with slot A.
It's Homer trying to build the grill. The French? What the hell does that mean?
Le grill? What the hell does that mean? And then I just love the joke. I was like, oh, le grill. Why doesn't mine look like that?
And then Marge is just, or Bart comes in, hey, how's Dad doing with the grill? And then Marge looks out the window.
He starts running at it with a giant umbrella, like it's like he's jousting.
Yeah. And he just collapses, and it's just like, fine.
So for Brownie Bites, we always have the clip of the week or the stinger. What if you took, like, what line would you take out of context from this movie?
Oh, well, hold on. Are you talking about if we had a soundboard, or?
Yeah, like, what if you had one line that you could take out of context and just always have, what would you do?
Oh my god. I texted you. There were so many moments that I just died laughing at, wishing I had a soundboard. I'm going to scroll. I mean, if you have one, I'm going to scroll to the text thread I sent you while I was watching this.
I think mine is technically two, but it's the one where at the very beginning when Ralphie's like, Kowalski saw some bears near Pulaski's candy store, and then his parents start staring at him. He goes, they looked at me like I had lobsters crawling out of my ears. I love that line.
Oh my god, that's really funny. Oh wait, no, okay, hold on. I just scrolled past it. Oh, nope, that's why I'm on my fantasy championship. Hold on. where was it? There was some lines that just made me laugh so hard. I mean, besides, I just want a general clip of the dad just going, bah, 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 bah. And I also want his brother crying, laughing, or just crying. Actually, I didn't have that long of a texture that I thought I did. I want his brother crying at least once. Just because that was really funny. We need to have just, you'll shoot your eye out, you'll shoot your eye
you'll
out.
You'll shoot your eye out.
Oh my god, I can't think of a really obscure line offhand.
We haven't even talked about the ending yet.
Oh, sure, yeah, if you want to touch base on that. I mean, honestly, I just...
Wanted to talk about it. What did you want to talk about it?
Well, no, I just wanted to talk about them at the Chinese restaurant.
Oh, I was thinking you meant the gun. Okay.
No. I mean, honestly, I don't have that really an obscure a line. We really talked about the only things that really stood out to me that made me laugh the hardest, like the classroom and the goose and
I do have one thing to point out, and it actually is a critique. Is
sure.
The kid in the classroom during the scene where the kid with his tongue stuck to the pole, and he's like, "Holy cow, it's the fire department!" He goes, "Oh my gosh, it's the cops!" I'm like, "Wow, great line reads, kid. Why don't you go sit in your chair and shut up?"
Right.
That kid is worse than Jake Lloyd.
Oh. It's on par. I'll give it that. it's pretty bad. I'll give you that. Actually, the last bit of trivia.
Holy cow, it's the fire department. Holy cow, it's the cops. Holy cow, it's an angel. Holy cow, this is pod racing.
Oh. Oh my god. No, it's not Jake Lloyd. It's that little kid that was best friends with Anakin. That was like, "Oh wow, it's a pod racer." And Kidster. Then the yeah, and it's like the Greedo alien with him that's
cow,
just like,
"This is so wizard, Annie."
And then the little Greedo kid that's just like, "Whoopee!" Like okay, sorry. Thank you for bringing that up. That was probably
and then one kid's like, "Holy cow! I'm itchy and I can't stop sweating."
Oh my god. Sorry. Oh my god. That. Okay. This is the last bit of trivia I have, and then we can stop talking about it. There is a sequel to this movie. That came out in 19...
my sister, I remember going, we went to Family Video in Lafayette, and my sister saw it, and she goes, "Hey, they made a sequel to A Christmas Story," and I went, "That sounds like the worst possible idea I've ever heard, I don't want to watch it." She said she watched like 5 minutes of it and turned off, she goes, "Yeah, that was one of the worst things I've ever seen."
Okay, so you've seen a little bit of It Runs in the Family.
I have, the only thing I've seen of it is I've seen the Nostalgia Critic review for it. I've actually, when she watched that movie, I refused to watch it. I was like, "That looks terrible. I don't want to watch it." Because this is back before the podcast when I could refuse watching terrible movies.
Okay. I honestly didn't even know It Runs in the Family was a movie. It's from Bob Clark. It's also from Gene Shepard. It inexplicably took as long as it took to make. And in the trivia, I read that the teacher was the only one that reprised her character, and I just... It's also
Wait,
from
is
another...
This... No, the one that I'm talking about has the guy from Home Alone that plays Marv.
Yeah, well, I don't think it's... Or, hold on, was it that Culkin? It does have the Culkin brothers in it.
No. It's got the guy that plays Marv, one of the Wet Bandits.
Oh,
as the dad. It's called
on.
A Christmas Story too. Not It's in the Family.
Oh no, there is A Christmas Story too, but what I'm talking about, I'm gonna hold this up in front of my camera. Can you see that poster?
Yeah, I've never seen that.
Oh yeah, no. This is yes, I did see that there is A Christmas Story too, but what I'm talking about is this is supposed to be the direct sequel to A Christmas Story. It Runs in the Family. It is from more short stories from Gene Shepard, and I'll just read you what the plot summary is. It is now summer and the Parker family, and the usual number of events is happening in their separate lives. Ralphie is searching for the perfect top to use to beat the school bully. The old man is in a battle with their hillbilly neighbors. The
I thought he was
going to
say with the air conditioner.
No, with their hillbilly neighbors, the Bumpuses, while eagerly awaiting the discovery of the perfect fishing spot, and the mother is attempting to collect all the pieces of a glass china set at a local movie theater.
Dude, that poor Bumpus dog that got its ear stuck in the door.
Oh my god, right?
Just sitting there like, oh.
Dude, okay, of all the little things that you've pointed out, that was something I noticed, was that he closed the ear on that poor dog's... He closed the ears on that poor dog. Like...
Yeah, that poor puppy.
But anyway, no, you've not seen It Runs in the Family, right?
No. Never even heard
okay.
of it.
No, I hadn't heard of it either until I was researching this movie, but to what you were saying, yes, I didn't know that they actually tried to make A Christmas Story 2, but what do you want to bet, over under, what's worse, A Christmas Story 2 or It Runs in the Family? Because It Runs in the Family was released straight to video.
Or the live Christmas Story, like, musical thing they had on ABC a couple years ago.
Oh, God, I don't even want to throw this in there. I just want to talk about, well, most of those are pretty bad, but I'm strictly talking about the movies. I'm strictly talking about the movies, over under, if we watch one of them.
Was probably the worst.
I don't know. Like, a movie that doesn't even, like, try to talk about Christmas, like, just trying to continue on that story... Like, not even in the vein of Christmas itself, because Christmas is such a character in the movie. I don't know. I would want to watch both those movies, but I don't want to pay for them, so I don't know when I'll ever end up seeing them. But I don't know. Maybe that's worth keeping an eye out for, It Runs in the Family. I kind of do want to keep It Runs in the Family on our watch list, like, just in case it happens to pop up.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, with that, I mean, I don't have much else to say about this movie other than on our scale, I give it sprinkles. I think A Christmas Story is great. I love this movie.
I give it sprinkles. Favorite Christmas movie of all time. I would say go watch it, but if you have cable, you've probably seen it 100 times. Love it. To me, it signifies the beginning of Christmas because I usually watch it the first time it comes on Christmas Eve. I usually watch the 8 o'clock showing of it. Love it. Can't get enough of it. I got nothing.
Right on. I'm right there with you. I mean, aside of it being a tradition for me, but it is the quintessential Christmas film. It's great. So with that, we're going to take a brief break and let you know what we got going on next week in our first episode of the new year 2020. We'll be right back. All right, everybody, that is it for this final episode of 2019 edition of Brownie Points. Thank you, as always, to Isla Marfinafugue for the music. Thank you so much, as always.
I want to see if the mic picks that up.
I hope it does. I can't hear it right now in my headphones, but I hope it does while I'm editing this.
I heard it in my headphone that's plugged into the mic, so I think it picked it up.
I just heard a very faint. thank you, Isla, for the music as always. And as always, thank you guys for listening to us. Next week, we are going to be kicking off 2020, not only with more lists for the Brownie Bites segment. I'm going to go ahead and spoil it, even though we don't usually always. We are going to be giving you. Our best of 2019. We are going to definitively tell you.
The week after will be the worst of 2019. So strap in for that one because it'll probably be more entertaining.
The next 2 weeks we're going to. The next 2 weeks we're going to be recapping our best and worst films of the year of 2019 definitively. We wanted to wait until January for that just to be kind of official. Next week our 10 favorite films that we saw during 2019.
So get ready for a full hour and 45 minute segment.
It's gonna be a long one, guys. Which is fine because we don't have that many films we're gonna watch. We do not have any award holdovers from 2019 that we're gonna be watching. All we're gonna be watching is Who thought we're gonna kick off 2020 with a horror movie? Because why not?
January and horror means who?
Well, we didn't have that.
We're gonna kick it off with a month we didn't have in 2019, where we give you reviews in January. So get ready for us to hate a lot of stuff.
Well, who'd have thought that we didn't have enough horror movies on the show? So let's just kick off the new year with another one.
Been a whole 5 minutes since we talked about one.
Yeah, we're going to be watching the remake of The Grudge. But wait, Dan, what? Isn't that a Time Machine movie? Didn't that come out in 2004? Yes, it did. But no, we have a new Grudge coming out this year in 2020, and it's from producer Sam Raimi. And if you didn't see the ads for it, I don't blame you, because I haven't seen ads for this outside of the ad I saw on YouTube literally a month ago. So
yeah, I've seen it twice because it popped up in front of a video I was watching on YouTube like yesterday, and then the day it dropped.
It's a remake of the 2002 I want to say a Japanese film Ju-on, and like I said, it's the second time America has remade this film since the 2004 film with Sarah Michelle Gellar. That's where we're going to be kicking off 2020 with, is a horror film. So we'll see what we get out of it. I'm not that excited for it. Nick, I'm guessing you're not that excited for it either.
I just want to put it on record. I don't care.
I just want to put on record...
She sounds like she swallowed a fishbone.
Right. But yeah, that's the one movie we're going to be watching theatrically or streaming next week is The Grudge, the 2020 remake. And for The Time Machine, it's my pick. And what I'm going to do is pick something a little off-kilter versus what I typically pick for The Time Machine. It's a movie that Nick confirmed that he has not seen before. I've not seen this movie all the way through. And I think that we should kick off 2020 with a bang. The scale that only Michael Bay can do, we're going to watch...
Michael Bay Explosions!
Yes, we're going to watch 1995's Bad Boys! Bad Boys!
What you gonna do?
No, this is not strictly because Bad Boys for Life is coming out in 2 weeks after this movie. I was thinking about it, and I wanted to pick a movie that it's not in the genre that I typically watch. I'm not promising I'm going to like this movie, because I know a lot of Time Machines I just want Nick's opinion on, even though I already love it. I call it a bonus that it can be kind of a prelude to when we watch Bad Boys for Life, because Lord knows we're going to have to watch it. But we haven't watched a Michael Bay film for the show. I don't typically like action movies. I just, for the sake of variety, I want to watch Bad Boys. It's on Netflix right now. Same with Bad Boys 2, but we're not recapping Bad Boys 2. We only are going to be talking about the first one, the original, where it all began, directed by Michael Bay, starring Will Smith and Martin Lawrence. I want us to talk about Bad Boys 1. So, I mean, like I said, you hadn't seen this before, right? Did you ever want to see this movie?
No. And no.
Right. Same with me. I've never had any desire to watch this movie before, but you know what? Screw it. For the show, let's go ahead and watch Bad Boys. Let's watch an action movie. Let's kick off 2020 with as big a bang as only Michael Bay can make. So, that's what we got coming down the pipeline for you guys next week. We are going to be talking about our 10 favorite films that we saw in 2019. We're going to watch the remake of The Grudge, and we're going to talk about Bad Boys 1 from 1995. Nick, where can people reach out to us via social media?
Facebook, Brownie Points Guide to Cinema, Twitter, @Brownie_cinema, and Instagram, Brownie_points_guide, as well as Gmail, BrowniePointsGuideToCinema@gmail.com. Let us know if you have time machine ideas you want us to do, if you have movies you want to make sure we go out of our way to see in theaters, especially this time of year where movies kind of just end up in theaters whenever. If you want list topics, time machine reviews, just in general discussion topics, trailers you want to know our opinions on, things like that, reach out to us on one of those.
All right. And if you are listening to us and have not hit that subscribe button, go ahead and do that. Whether you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or Anchor.fm or .com, go ahead and mash that subscribe button. Leave us a review. Any word of mouth that you add for the show, we greatly appreciate it. We love the community that we have right now, and just we can't wait to see it grow larger and larger as we go into the new year of 2020. All of you that have been with us since we started the show, literally like March, 3rd, 1st, whatever, we started the show just back in March, and everything that we've gone through since March, just thank you so much. We love all of you that have been with us.
Unless you gave us the copyright strikes on YouTube.
Well, yes, outside of YouTube. You've been with us through so many movies. You've been with us through our Star Wars recap, which you can still listen to. It's on this feed. We covered every single live-action Star Wars movie, literally 1 through 9, including Solo and Rogue One. That was an endeavor, and if you want to listen to us talk about that, it will always be on the feed. It was a blast, just like the show itself. And I, speaking just strictly for myself, closing out the year, I'm so happy that we've done this. I'm happy that you agreed to be my co-host, and
I'm happy you allowed to you agreed to have me on more than just 2 reviews a week.
Yes, oh my God, that was probably the biggest thing that ended up being the biggest positive. I thank you for
out of the pilot was
my hubris.
Was us just sitting there going, man, it really sucked till I showed up.
Well, okay, sure, yes, I'm very thankful that you agreed to be on it, like, and just really, it's not our anniversary, I will, but just these, however many, what, these
44.
Almost 10 months of this show, just thank you, Nick, thank you, listeners, and just. Hopefully we will continue onward beyond 2020 to 2021, 2023, 2030, whatever, however long we keep going on with this show. Just this is 2019 has been such an eventful year for us. Thank you so much for joining us, and just from the bottom of our hearts, we love you. Thank you so much for joining us, and may you continue following us as we keep just talking about movies, really. Just the fact that you're listening to us just talk about movies instead of anything else, we really love it, we appreciate it, and we cannot wait to see what the future holds for us. I mean, Nick, do you have anything else to add as we close out the year?
Just make sure you don't shoot your eye up.
I should have had a timer on for that. That was good.
I got lightheaded.
Well, with that, we will say goodbye to 2019. Again, thank you guys so much for joining us on this journey that we've been on. Next week, we will be back with our favorite films of 2019, along with the remake of The Grudge and the Will Smith and Martin Lawrence Michael Bay epic Bad Boys. We will see you then. Have a happy new year from us at Brownie Points. we will see you next week.
I already did my sign-off thing. So I just, so you know, I'll gush about the show on our anniversary episode, just when you guys hear about how this whole thing came to exist. So, yeah, that's my stinger.
But I, when Adam Sandler's not Gappa the Goop Woo guy, I think he's a good actor.